Μούλα. Where is the deputy president? No. Oh.
The chairman.
You'll introduce them, president. Don't worry.
No, I was just going to explain the absence of the deputy.
Oh.
He apologizes because he's he has a SAFCOC meeting.
Okay.
Apologies on his behalf.
Okay. No, okay. Thank you. But honorable members, President Hoskins, we want to appreciate your coming, and then we also want to appreciate the apology that you sent to the committee when you're not in a position to come here, and then Veleli came and explained why are you having some challenges to come, and we were ready to accept that apology so that at least you must go on with the business of your organization, the rugby. But we want to appreciate again your coming today on this meeting. But I want to put it on record that you are part of these federations that would always, when we request to interact with them, do not raise an objection to an extent that we almost wrestle at some stage. There's never been such an instance with the South African Rugby Union. You always come because you know what are the obligations and challenges for us to interact with yourself. We want to appreciate that. I think you have received our invite, and I'm happy that you brought Dr. Basson. Is it Dr. Basson? Eh? Veli Basson. Because this meeting is a follow-up, President, of a series of meetings that we have been having, all of us, around the presentation that was made to us, and therefore, as and when we move, and then we ask the committee secretary, say, these matters were raised, and therefore, just take them out, and then we want to go and follow and find out how far have these matters been followed. One of those, so that at least you must know, is around the implementation of the charter which was presented to us. And that was very important to us around the program that we are putting as Parliament. But the other matter was that there will be other matters that probably when the presentation is given, that members will interact with that question and all. But I have, I will allow you to introduce your... There's a cold wind blowing inside here. I don't know where does it come from. Huh? Thank you very much. It's making a noise. Thanks. I could hear now in the ear. But the other thing, President, before we interact, I would give you an opportunity so that you introduce the delegation that you accompany, and therefore I would start this meeting, and so that at least we would deal. Because one of the things that are there is going to be all matters that are related to the invite that was sent to you. But if there are other matters that are there, would be matters that are cropping up as and when we're interacting with yourself. So I'll give over to you to introduce a delegation, and then from there I will take over and just say something.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen. On my left, if I may start on this end, is Mr. Mpeleli Nqula. He's formerly the Deputy CEO of SARU, now a consultant to the organization. Mr. Rotis Rotenbach is the Vice President. And then on my right are Dr. Basson, who's a consultant, and Mr. Mpumalelo Chume, who is chairman of SA Rugby Pty Limited. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's Chume still the chair. Oh, chairperson. Welcome. You look very relaxed. I like that. I like when you are relaxed, chairperson. At times you worry me and get very nervous a little bit. But I'm your brother. You don't have to worry anything. Now, President, quickly, before we go on, it's on record, President, that we have interacted with the Pumas Rugby Union from Mpumalanga. We have called them and called also the MEC for sports in Mpumalanga. Both of them came here in Parliament. But in our interaction, and also on that interaction, there was a legal opinion from a Criminal Procedural Act, which you are very versed with as a lawyer, of 1977, that deals with dispensation around the appeal. Because we were having a serious concern around the Pumas fielding a murderer who has killed a cold-blooded person and very arrogantly saying, since that person has been there, there has been an increase of an exposure of the television to the team, and therefore it's evoking interest with no complete remorse around that. But one thing that we said, when you come, would ask you this thing, because he's on record, but I have warned him that I hope you don't deliberately mislead Parliament, because its consequences are very huge. Maybe he has not know that. He must ask the other Mr. Person, what are the consequences of misleading Parliament? Now, he said there is a legal opinion that was given by SARU to him. A certain Mr. Ferrer gave a legal opinion. That legal opinion was saying there is nothing wrong in the Pumas fielding a person who's been convicted. And that person, at the time when we were interacting with them, President, he was confirmed by two courts. Confirmed. First court found him guilty, and then for 12 years, and then he appealed. The second court found him guilty. Then they went to a third court. That's why now, on the fourth time, they're going to the Constitutional Court. And the legal opinion in Parliament, we had to go and ask our own legal opinion in Parliament, and the advocate came here and said, no, the Criminal Procedural Act is very clear on that. If there is an appeal, and then the presiding magistrate or a judge would make an emphasis in saying, this appeal set aside even the conviction, and therefore everything, when the magistrate announced, put it aside, and even the sentence. But in these instances, there is no emphasis or a clarity by the magistrate that this person has appealed, and therefore even his sentence has been uplifted. And then he said, no, he's got a different copy from Mr. Ferreira, and then the legal opinion. Then we have asked him in this house that you must send us that legal opinion because we need it. Up until today, we have not received that legal opinion. Today we want to convince ourselves that there is that kind of a legal opinion, and that that was given to the Pumas and to field such a player. Because we're saying, if it's a corrective measure, yes, we'd agree. They might be doing the right thing so that this boy must rehabilitate. But it is not just that kind of a thing. It is, must be a rehabilitation where they publicly apologize and show remorse, so that all of us, when you go and clap hands and play and watch him playing there, we must say At least he has shown a remorse. Instead, they're saying, no, we have killed somebody who's unknown, who doesn't have any place. Is it right for people to be killed because they are just vagabonds running up and down and they don't have a place, and therefore the only thing that you can do to them is to kill them? So we said, no, we went to get that legal opinion. But we went further, my brethren, and asked the research to get me the constitution of Rugby, which says something different from what the Pumas were saying. Maybe now the legal opinion had carried a weight than the constitution of the South African Rugby on a person who is a convict. So today, unfortunately, that one we didn't tell you about, but I said that today I must set the record straight so that we begin to set this thing, and then it must be laid to final. We just want to get whether your knowledge around the whole thing, President, and the legal opinion that was given to this man around this Van Schalkwyk rugby play. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As the President, I put out a public statement informing the public that as an organization, we and I personally call for the immediate stopping of that gentleman from Scarborough playing rugby. That statement was a public statement, went to the whole country. Mr. Heinemans is a new president. He's just been elected to the Pumas. And I would like to think that he will learn a lot now that he's attending South African rugby meetings. Mr. Chairman, I know that as an organization, like most sports federations, we have rules governing disciplinary procedures which are distinguishable from criminal courts. These are internal procedures where a person is found guilty or tried for misconduct or for any breach of the constitution or any rules and regulations of the organization. And then, of course, there are rules and sanctions that govern that person's misconduct. I have not seen the opinion that you speak about. I hope that it's not being confused with criminal sanction as opposed to a sports code sanctions and its own penalties. I know that we do have, as an organization, a code of conduct and rules and regulations governing misconduct and illegalities. That is an independent process, and I take it that if a person is found guilty and he appeals it, I know that he's still allowed to play. So if, for example, a player is guilty of, just as a mere example, if he assaulted somebody, one of his fellow counselors, there will be an internal inquiry and he might be found guilty. But he may continue to still serve on the council. So I'm not sure if Christo Ferreira, who's the internal lawyer, gave those rules and regulations to Heinemans. So at this stage, well, what I can do for the portfolio committee is to get that opinion this week, tomorrow, in fact, and forward it to you tomorrow so that we can clarify it. But I'm sorry that I can't take the matter further because I don't know what has been sent to Heinemans.
Okay. No, it's fine, President. It's okay. We'll gladly be in a position, be happy if we get that opinion. But one thing that we want to appreciate, when we're speaking to this gentleman about the statement that you made, the gentleman said that he's not aware of that statement. Widespread statement. It was saying, no, it's not aware of that. Yes, it was not aware of that statement. But I want to say, President, I hope that document that was given to him, I pray that it must be a legal opinion. And that has advised him. Or else he has deliberately misled us. And if that is the last option that he has chosen to take, he has chosen a very serious wrong option for himself. With all the arrogance that he was having the other day. But we have dealt with that one. Because, you know, if you are a right-wing person and then you come and display it here, we deal with you because here it's not the officials of the department here. These are legislators of this country who are dealing with matters of making this country a safe home from the right-wings who are like him the other day. And we're dealing with those, and with no remorse for that matter. We're dealing with it in the manner in which he wanted to demonstrate to us. We have dealt with it in that way. But we thank you very much, President, in that statement and in the manner in which we are. But we're patiently waiting for that legal opinion that he has been given so that we must deal with it. You see, President, it will set a wrong precedent. If we allow such things to happen, to set a wrong precedent, there is no any other institution in this country that is above this institution in this country. Not even a constitutional court, not even any other magistrate court. In this country, South Africa, this institution where we are is the highest body in this country. So we must accord it a respect that this institution deserves, just like what you are doing and others are doing. So others think that they come here and then they just come to do whatever. In fact, the only thing that we didn't do in terms of these rules, the way it was arrogant, the rules are saying, as soon as you display that kind of an arrogance, it's a contempt of Parliament. But he said maybe it's a fundi. It's the first time he came to Parliament and therefore he thought that maybe we will be scared when he's dealing with us in that way. But we warned him. That please don't do those things. You are compelled to give us information. We're not going to make it something that we are praying for. If you don't want to give us information, the law demands that you must give us that information by force. And you can't talk to us in a manner that shows demeaning of the honorable members, and then you're not going to do it. And those are the things that we have explained to him. But we'll learn, President, as you say. We'll learn, but others are going to learn a little bit hard at times. Thank you very much. President, I'm going to give over to you because this is not the issue that needs question and all that clarity. It was just a matter that I have to convey to you. We'll give over to you, President, to choose any person that are just going to give us the progress around the implementation of this transformation. But members asked me to convey a message to you and also to your board that we're looking with keen interest and hope in the manner in which the team has been playing recently against the odds. It has been doing very well, and then I appreciate and then I've apologized for not being able to attend Bloemfontein because there was an urgent meeting. I'm a member of the Provincial Executive Committee in the Free State, and therefore, when there are issues there that demands the ANC to attend, I know that I'm compelled to go there. But I will come to the new lens. But we appreciate the manner you are playing, although this week we're a little bit tense, but finally they break the silence at the end. But all the same, I think it's doing very well. Yeah, thank you very much. We can deal with the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know that your letter or correspondence stated three topics. If I may, we can can I suggest to you, humbly suggest to you, that we deal with, try to deal with those, and then if there are other issues that you wish to raise with us afterwards, we'd gladly like to deal with them.
No, it's okay, President. We accept that.
The first one was, in no order of importance, was the Southeastern Cape. Then the second one, if I recall, was transformation, and the third one was the SuperSport TV deal. Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, the Southeastern Cape, and I'll try to be as straight to the point as possible, so that we can deal with the matters without beating about the bush. When we as a leadership came into office just over 2 years ago, we decided that the South and the Eastern Cape is a very high priority. And in that regard, we embarked on a plan, a very well thought out plan, strategy. First and foremost, the challenge was for us to buy the investment that a company which is very famous to the Eastern Cape, or infamous, I should say, SAIL, was a very powerful equity partner in the three unions. We had to, together with those unions, buy out SAIL so that those unions could stop from being suffocated, because they were being suffocated. They were literally without any equity at all to undertake their programs of mass rugby in the area. And SA Rugby decided, and the chairman is here, and he will elaborate on that. Despite us being warned by our auditors, and we had independent auditors and an audit committee, we were warned not to put money into the three unions because they were a financial risk. We took the risk nonetheless, and we purchased sales shares at a very good rate. In fact, if I recall, I think SAIL probably had in excess of 11 million rands owed to them by the three unions cumulatively. But we managed to get SAIL to sell us the shares in those three unions for half that price. So it was about 2 million each. And that freed the unions of SAIL's equity stake in the three unions. That was a very big step, despite the auditors saying that we shouldn't do it because we were throwing good money to bad. But we took the step because we realized how important the Eastern and Southeastern Cape was for rugby. The other issue that was also posing us a real threat at the time was the issue of the Spears. And I know that Mr. McKeever is here. Now, the Spears were a franchise that was set up in the area under the managing directorship of Mr. McKeever. At the time, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. McKeever will not dispute this fact, the Spears had spent in excess of 6 million rands. And obviously Mr. McKeever will be able to account to this honorable committee as to how that money was spent.
Now, I want to put another record directly. Mr. McKeever is not part of the people that are presenting to the meeting president today. He has come for knowing that the rugby is coming here and all that. And there is nothing that we are going to ask him around all what you say, because if that is the case, it should be another process for now on us. It's only this matter and yourself and any. But you can't stop him from coming into the committee in the meeting as he so wishes. So don't worry about that.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm, you know, we try our best to be transparent, and interactive. So it's in that spirit that I say this, and not to want to denigrate anybody. And so, to cut a long story short, then, Mr. Chairman, we said that it wasn't in the interest of that area for the Spears to continue. We had a number of meetings with the Spears. And we said that we wanted to get the unions back on a good footing so that they can be healthy again to have a Super 14 franchise and not the other way around. And so we took that decisive decision. However, let me stress, Mr. Chairman, that we said that whilst we're building up the unions again to put them back on a healthy footing, it was always our intention to have a franchise in the Eastern Cape, Southeastern Cape. And in fact, if I can just cut to the chase, we have spent in excess of R500,000 a few weeks ago to fund a team made up of those three unions, which has actually formed the embryo of a new franchise. They are presently training. They are preparing. They played one match against Western Province, and this is preparing them for the new franchise, which we hope to see as soon as the new contract is signed. In that regard, the chairman who's sitting here is attending SANSA, which is the international forum, and has put the case forward for a franchise for the Eastern Cape and continues to do so for us in that regard. So the Eastern Cape and the Southeastern Cape for us has been a special priority. Mr. Chairman, I'm proud to say that in the Eastern Province there was a lot of conflict. The Vice Chairman will know. Serious conflict. It was extremely difficult to deal with that Eastern Province. But I saw it as my duty to do the best to resolve the conflict. There were two parties, and nobody could resolve that conflict. But I think by the grace, or divine grace, we were able to bring the parties together, as Mr. Frolic will tell us, and at least the peace was obtained there eventually. And so much so in the Eastern Province that now we have unity. I'm not saying that it's hunky-dory. There are still underlying problems. But we have to continue to work towards unity in the Eastern Province and in the Eastern Cape, because that's the only way that rugby will prosper there. So thank God that we have peace in the Eastern Province. We have a co-leadership, Mr. Watson and Mr. De Silva, leading the Eastern Province. And that is a great thing that has happened there, and that will take the area forward. So, Mr. Chairman and ladies and gentlemen, the Eastern Cape, Southeastern Cape is a top priority for us. We have also funded, at a cost of almost R200,000, an inter-club competition. It's actually called a super club competition between the top clubs, four clubs from Border, from Eastern Province, and from the Eagles. And they travel to each other's areas weekends to play each other. It's called a super club competition, and they need money for transport and for jerseys, and SA Rugby has funded that. In addition to that, we appointed a project manager, Godfrey Africa, and his package cost about R1 million to help the three unions with their infrastructure and to help them on a daily basis to improve rugby, to interface with government, etc., etc. Talking about government, last week I attended a meeting, Mr. Chairman, with the Eastern Cape government, the MEC of Sport, Ms. Abram Dantizo, and her department officials in King, Williamstown. And it was a most heartening meeting, because I discovered that the way forward is very positive. The Eastern Cape government, contrary to what many people believe, including myself, is actually prepared to put money into the Eastern Cape area, as long as it's it sees that there's progress in the administration of those three unions. And that is our challenge, especially in border. There's a major challenge in border, because whilst the Eastern Province and Southwestern Eagles are now operating in the black, and things have been turned around, border, unfortunately, the present administration of border has inherited problems from previous leadership of border. So much so that the border union is owing the receiver of revenue in excess of 6 million rand.
This is London.
East London.
It's not the one that we said they must close water and electricity.
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chairman, it's the border one that's the challenge. We are engaging them on a regular basis. In fact, I'm visiting them next week with officials from the office to further take forward some way of helping them in border. Also in the Eastern Cape, Mr. Ngula is here, and Dr. Basson. We have a project called the Legacy Project for the Transkei. The Transkei is very dear to us, and about a few weeks ago we spent over 100,000 rands to have workshops of grassroots people in the Transkei, so that we can see that where the needs are most, and that we can identify the infrastructure so that we don't put money in there and it goes to waste. The Legacy Project for the Transkei is something that we're hoping will really be a success in the general upliftment of the Transkei and rugby and the people of the Transkei. So, Mr. Chairman, the South Eastern Cape, Eastern Cape, we've also had a lot of help from SuperSport. SuperSport as a company have committed themselves to a lot of money in the Eastern Cape by way of screening school games, live black schools, private schools. When I say black schools, township schools, poor schools even, they are showing these rugby matches. They've also agreed to have projects for the legends of the Eastern Cape, the forgotten heroes. And they've done well. Mr. Frolic will know how they have come to assist poor clubs in Eastern Province who haven't got jerseys, and he himself has been working on getting many, many clubs jerseys who don't have kit. So SuperSport have been very helpful in the Eastern Cape and in the upliftment of the Eastern Cape. Mr. Chairman, my colleagues can join me and mention things that I've left out, but we are committed to the Eastern Cape because in terms of our transformation, and we'll talk about transformation just now, we realize that the Eastern Cape, Southeastern Cape, is where the majority of people play rugby. So it means even the black people play rugby there. We don't have to still teach the people how to play rugby there. And we understand that if transformation will succeed ultimately in this country, we have to put more resources in. And that is why I spend 80% of my time in the Eastern Cape. So I think as an administration, we will continue to spend time and resources and people power in the South and Eastern Cape area. Because we understand that if we uplift that area and they become a franchise playing in the Super Series, which they will become, then transformation is going to be pushed in the senior ranks, whereas our challenge is at the senior level, not in the junior level. And we will continue to spend most of our time and energy and resources on the South and Eastern Cape. Lastly, we have, as a leadership, decided to sit on those unions' boards. I am chairing the Eastern Province Board. Other colleagues are sitting on Eagles, others on Border, so that we can monitor from SA Rugby side the development of rugby in that area. We don't do that in any other province. We only do it for the Eastern Cape and Southeastern Cape because we regard it as special, it's a special project, and we are committed to to upliftment of the Eastern and Southeastern Cape. And the most heartening thing for me was the government's response in the meeting last week. I see great things happening there, and I think Mr. Chume will want to add something.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a correction and then add something, Chairperson. When we constituted the Southeastern Cape as a collective, it included Border, EP, and the Southwestern Cape. The Southwestern District, sorry. And for us, it made sense that that grouping would form a franchise. But recently, Southwestern districts have got other ideas, Chairperson, that they're not sure that they want to belong into this collective. They're still making their minds as to whether it is the right option for them or they want to go back to the Stormers option. Okay. The consequence of that is that when that collective that the President was referring to was playing against Western Province, you would notice that the Southwestern District was not represented in that team. And that's the reason, is that they've not made up their minds yet as well. They want to commit to this collective or they want to join the Stormers. So that's one thing that I wanted just to put into perspective. The other issue is around the SANZA, the joint venture between Australia and New Zealand ourselves, a joint venture that manages the Super 14 competition and the Tri-Nation competition. Now, we have been very honored and indeed a privilege that in the next 2 years, South Africa will be chairing that joint venture. The consequence of that, Chairperson and the members, is that we're doing it at a time when the SANZA needs review. The entire joint venture needs review, including the products called Super 14 and Tri-Nation. So as the chairperson of SANZA in the next 2 years, we have been mandated to actually undertake the review of the organization. The opportunity for South Africa is that we're able to actually drive our own imperative, which is the addition of an additional franchise into the mix that will actually come out on 2011 as new products at the end of the day. Now, we feel pretty confident that we wouldn't have to replace any of the existing franchise for the Southeastern Cape franchise reality to come through. We believe that we can add another franchise. Australia wants to add another franchise. They will house around Melbourne. And, of course, there's the question of the Pacific Islanders who want to participate. There's Argentina that has got to participate. We'll be talking to Japan. We'll be talking to the United States of America. All this is done to make sure that we can actually put together a product that will be actually attractive come 2011. And that, in our view, would include a sixth franchise at the Southeastern Cape at the time. I wanted to add that, Chairperson.
No, thank you very much. You're speaking very progressive language, man. It's heartening to hear that. But President would recall there was an outcry from the media and other people that we are forcing rugby to put a franchise there. It is true, we don't apologize for that, President. And you knew you had agreed with us. You led us that the franchise in the Eastern Cape is the correct thing. For us to be able to deal with strategic intervention on transformation, we can't neglect that area because that's where the culture of the sports is. And a research made by Mr. Basson, when he was presenting that transformation chart, was talking at the heart of taking a risk and put investment there because there is that potential of that rugby there, which has a historical background. So even your support now around that franchise in the Eastern Cape, it's not a far thinking. It's correct. And then I think we'll support you in that thing. It's a correct thing because we want that area to be built so that at least it must do that intervention. If you can recall, everybody vilified you when you left here around that franchise. You remember there was a problem around that. The minister agreed that that franchise should go there. We all agreed that the franchise should go there. But the prophets of doom were saying, no, that franchise can't go there. But we were saying it must go there exactly the way you choose to think. In fact, Comrade Cedric was part of our argument in Nelson Mandela and said, we can't say you must go and play now because they're going to eliminate you quickly. Let us build a team, if you can recall. Let's build a team. And then in 2 years' time, then the franchise must be there. But there were some issues there which, in a way, renegated that kind of an agreement. I hope this one that you're putting in place now, and then it will not be hindered by any other thing. Because we were emphatic, we're clear, we knew what we're supporting you around the franchise in that area. And we still support you around the franchise in that area because it's going to make us to have all the players that are coming from that area. They are full from the Blue Bulls anyway, but they are not playing at home because there is no proper investment and keeping them where they are. And that's why they have to go all over. You can mention any team in this country, any provincial team, you'll know that there are players that are coming from the Eastern Cape around play. But I just wanted to make an emphasis on that. Cora, and then Rick, and Cedric.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. You know, I've been listening carefully to what the President and Mr. Chuma just said now. Let me start with SWD. If I was part of SWD, I would have done the very same thing. Because you can't stay in a house which you don't know is still going to be out tomorrow. Because the way this Eastern franchise has been treated, each and every time we hear about it, 2 years, 2 years, we just keep on shifting the goalposts. And which is really unfair. These 2 years we talk about, even with the time of Brian Van Rooyen, it was an issue, this thing of the Eastern Cape franchise. And I want to be honest and frank with you, that many of these big franchises, these big Blue Bulls, Stormers and what have you, they don't want this thing to survive so that they can get players from there and to say that they've got players of color because there is no development taking place in those areas. Now, Mr. Schumann said that about after 2 years, you'll be chairperson of SANZA. That time, you are no more in the leadership. It's a new leadership which comes. Then it's again that, give us another 2 years. To me, really, this thing is just keeping the gold being shifted any further. The issue of Mr. Hoskins is in the second term. We can't keep on acting as if we are new. When you come into a position, the files are there. You continue from that. The one who works out doesn't go with files. So this thing, to me, this is a deliberate thing. Not only from SAR, but with this, because you get your vote from these big federations. And that's why you must dance the music while they're playing. To me, this is unacceptable, Comrade. Because we've been coming a long time with this thing of these fears and what have you. Now we have been told by 2011. Oh, I. Now.
I can't take it.
Rich.
Thank you, Chair. Now, I want to take the President and his entourage a little further. You know, before the Super 40, you had the Stormers, the Bulls, Sharks, and you had the Cats. Remember? Even at the time when the idea was mooted to form Southern Spears, Brian Van Rooyen was still SARU president at the time, and you were sponsored by Ford. The top car they had was a Ford Mondeo. He wanted to drive a Rover. That's why he engaged the president of Free State Union to get him a deal with Rover. In turn, he was split. The cats and the cheetahs could feel the team. That is the truth. So the whole issue, the somersaulting from Sadi Elizabeth around the spears is really uncalled for. Then, Oscar, it is quite clear from what you said that you were not involved in the former SARU in the Eastern Cape. It's quite clear. You said some blacks are playing rugby there. You know, that is the area where blacks, rugby playing blacks are in the vast majority, the Southeastern Cape. And in terms of the whole issue of finance, you had to bail out these unions. You know, Southwestern Districts Rugby Union, I come from that area. They were a profitable union. But at the time, when the new decision came and they elected Joey Daniels as president, they appointed Heineke Meyer as coach, and he took all the money of that union to buy the B team players of Northern Transvaal then. That is why they went bankrupt. But in terms of, let me come back, this issue around the Spears can no longer be postponed. Southern Spears. If you take the players from that particular area playing in other franchises, you can field a very strong team. With the likes of this Zane Kircher, what's his name? That Springbok from yeah, and Bevan Fortein, Kabamba Floor, Solita Brika, and them. I mean, there's Tygum Gaweni. There's Luke Watson. What more do you want? Let them play and expose the Lions and the Cheetahs, who had many opportunities, but they failed to move away from bottom spot. For how long can we tolerate that? Thank you, Chair.
Many of those were comments, and then if those comments, you need to respond to those comments, you're free to do that. Let's take the last, Cedric.
No, thank you, Chairperson. No, you are correct, Chairperson, in the previous speakers. The President is correct by saying that the situation of the Spears was a very delicate issue that had to be managed in a specific way, and it was this committee that supported the idea that the Spears were not ready to participate in the Super 14 because the building blocks were simply not put in place. The serious concerns we had at the time. That was 2006. However, when we reached the point that we said that to SARU, what are your plans? And we suggested a 2 to 3 year program to get them ready, that by 2009 they would be ready for participation. Now, it seems that everything didn't go according to plan. But be that as it may, Chairperson, there was reference made by the President that they bought the investment from sale. So that investment rests now with SARU, and that certain benefits accrued to the unions that was involved. And unfortunately, the financial situation of the border bulls has gone down to such an extent that they are in the red. What are these benefits that accrued to these different unions where SARU is now the majority stakeholder?
Can I respond? When SAIL was equity partner there, the union's loan accounts with SAIL were so large in the end, even the grants that those unions were getting from SA Rugby, and those unions basically rely on the grants that they get from SA Rugby. That's almost 99% of their income. What was happening was that those grants were no longer going to amateur rugby, like your clubs, your schools, your technicons, women's rugby, etc., children's rugby in general. Those monies were actually going to sale to pay off the loan accounts. So in the end, rugby was not even being played in the Eastern Cape and Southeastern Cape because of the huge debt that was accruing to SAIL. So what happened when we bought SAIL out of those three unions? We did it on the basis that we will not receive a cent from those unions. So those unions were now able to use 100% of the income that they got from. So that released the stranglehold, Mr. Vice, on those three unions. So one can see the enormous change that took place from sales equity to SA Rugby.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
I'm just going to mention a few things, Mr. Hoskins, because it's all related to this matter. Being that, as you explained now, you know, we are facing a specific challenge even in those unions where those benefits have accrued. And the president of South African Rugby is correct that I am involved to quite an extent to some of those different clubs and things that is with SuperSport, seeing that we can assist them. But the question is the South African Rugby Union satisfied now that the grant that should go towards the amateur side reaches the amateurs? Because still when you engage those clubs, they still sit with the same problems. They still say they don't have money to travel, to fulfill their fixtures. Equipment and all those type of things. Just yesterday on Youth Day, and it was quite a remarkable event where some of the clubs that was participating there and the schools, and through the office of SARU and Eastern Province, we managed to get some rugby balls. And it's things like that that they need. They don't need millions of rand. In fact, at a recent match between Progress and Gardens, where 14,000 people attended the match on a Saturday afternoon, the president of Progress said, please, just ask SARU that we get a small percentage point of the SuperSport deal to come our way also, so that we can benefit out of it. That is how dire the need is there. And we will continue where we can to assist them in trying to play rugby, because that is essentially what they want to do. But more importantly, in terms of your overall strategy for the Super 14 team or Super team that is to be located there, where is the academy fitting in? You can remember there was very good initiatives in its preliminary stages for the SARU Academy at Ellisdale, and recently I heard that it will move somewhere else. Can you just fill us in on the latest, on the status of that academy? Because that will also prove vital, not only in terms of transformation of our teams at the national level, but even the regional team can somehow benefit out of that. And then, Chairperson, if we have a situation where one of those entities say they're not sure anymore, they want to go somewhere else because of this never-ending time frame, we would like the South African Rugby to come forward and tell us bluntly and say, listen here, as Mr. Chume has more or less alluded to now, that it will not be able for the next 3 years to have a franchise in that region. But this is the time frame. Because these open-ended discussions about the franchise doesn't serve us any purpose. We want to know that where the bastion of black rugby in the country is, by that year there will be a super team that will be put in place. And recently, 2 days ago, I phoned the president and the CEO of Eastern Province Cricket. They have a franchise there called the Warriors. And I said, congratulations, you have signed up three top players, national players, Jacques Callis, Boucher, and Ashley Prince, who will play their cricket in that franchise now. How much did you pay for them? And they said to me, no, but we didn't pay anything. We got them free from the South African cricket, or Cricket South Africa. Why can't similar initiatives, or what stands in the way of similar initiatives being undertaken to see that that region is also propped up by stronger players in certain positions? Because as the situation is currently there, Chairperson, it's going to be very difficult to all of a sudden, across the board, have all these top 15 or 22 players ready to participate, even 2-3 years down the line. They need to be propped up and they need to be reinforced with national players to make it viable for that super team to succeed. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. President, you will be held by the Chairperson. You see, Chairperson, there's nonsense asked by many people from us that you just want people to go in there. There is no merit. It's not true. In this case, what we are pushing, we are saying, a merit will only be when you have set up infrastructure there, you have done everything equal to those counterparts that are playing rugby. Then, in that way, you will be talking about merit. Not this nonsense that any other person is asking us about that merit. This is what we are pushing you to do there, so that you set up that infrastructure, do everything. When those boys are ready, then they can take anybody. Then it is at that level that we can talk about merit, not this other thing that people are talking about. And especially when we talk about rugby, there are other people who think that they are more eloquent and knowledgeable about the issues of merit more than us, and distort what we're talking about around the issues of transformation. Yes. So I just wanted to say that it is by no means, unless when it is black president, it's equated to merit. When it is white, it's automatically that it has what it takes. Unless if that is the case, I agree. If you are white, you are privileged, and then you have what it takes. If you are black, then you must pursue the issue of merit, and then I'll agree with that one. Yes, Chairman Chume.
Yes, Chairperson, just to kick off the comments around the Eastern Cape, especially club rugby and so on. South African rugby has a pool of resources, namely money, that is allocatable to the various provinces, targeting the whole question of development at the grassroots level. And it's done on the basis that the province submits their plans around the development in the province, and those plans are assessed by somebody at the center here in Cape Town, very qualified individual, who would look at this plan, not only qualified, but understands the question of development and what is happening at the grassroots, would look at this plan and say, okay, on the basis of this plan and what you want to implement, I'm going to give you half of the money that's allocated to you this time around to go and implement this plan. And after that, then we need to review the results of the implementation, all right? That would then qualify you to get the remainder of the grant. Okay, so I'm saying that money then goes to the province and, of course, goes to the president, who then ensures that he actually distributes the money at the various areas of his province. Now, if obviously the money is not sufficient, one would expect then the province to come back and say, SA Rugby, we spend all the grant money, you know, for the purpose that intended, but there are shortcomings at Transkei and Pedi, whatever the case may be. And then SA Rugby obviously has got to look at that and then act accordingly. So the question of money going at grassroots is a question of allocation from the center and, of course, the implementation and the spending of the money by the province at the grassroots level. Okay. So that's how we're approaching it, Chairperson. I just wanted the president perhaps wants to add something on this before we carry on the academy issue. Right. Now, if I may kick off then on the academy, you would recall that we're very enthusiastic and indeed very, very upbeat about establishing an academy in Ellis. And this was meant to consolidate our strategy to make sure that the South Eastern Cape is prepared indeed for the work has been done, Chairperson, in terms of then going beyond the words and start putting the framework around the academy and see exactly what kind of resources that this academy would require for us to be implemented. And at this time, the work that has been done is indicating that we would need a capital injection of 30 million to be able to actually put the infrastructure that is required for this academy to actually roll on. Now, 30 million, it's a sizable amount of money. Now, you'd have to look at ways and means of funding this kind of capital injection. One of the things that we have done through the president was to engage IRB, International Rugby Board, to say we believe that we have a responsibility of spreading the gospel of rugby and therefore spreading the gospel, the development of rugby throughout the world. I would very much want you to actually make an investment, okay, in this academy. Now, their response to the president was that certainly we're prepared to grow rand for rand as long as your government, because they want to partner with our government to make sure that this actually academy comes to reality. So that's where we are. Chairperson. We have a meeting pending with the DG of the Ministry of Sports and Recreation to brief him and give him a full presentation around this project. We did the same in King Leopoldstown with MEC Abraham Dandiso, who also wanted a presentation around this project so that they can see how they can contribute resources to make this project a reality. So that's where it is. Maybe the president wants to add something on it.
President, I just want to ask Chairperson, why is it rent on rent? Why is it not 2 rand on rent?
Well, that was their condition, if you like.
Yeah.
They, we would want your government to demonstrate also,
yes,
that the question of development, especially as it has the spin-off of transformation,
yes,
is as important as it is to us.
Yeah, you see, whoever, whether it's Korea or Japan or anywhere else, it would be a reasonable match if they were saying to South Africa, Saru, if government would match this on a rent to 2 rand, then it was going to demonstrate the will on their side that if they're saying rent to rent, it's almost a little bit unfair. It is not. I'm just whispering to Cedric. I'm saying with the DG and those people, it is not a mountain to climb. But the only thing that it doesn't augur very well to me is the rent to rent.
Well, Chairperson, if I may quickly, members of the committee, it could well be a negotiation stance, Chairperson, that they wouldn't want to be seen to be the wholesale funder, you know, of this project. Probably they really would want and make it settle for a 2 to 1 rand kind of thing. So, but where it is now is that they are saying that we're putting a rand, okay, we want your government to put a rand. Okay, now it depends on how the government responds to that. It may well to say that, well, we have 50 cents, okay? Can you put your 150 kind of thing? Yeah.
Chairman, I just wanted to add to what Mr. Chume has said. The academy is important, I agree. I know that KwaZulu-Natal Rugby Union have been in long discussions with Border. They are about to set up the academy for East London. It's about to be launched any day now. It's going to be very successful. The Sharks also went to East Province, but I think there was some reluctance on the part of Eastern Province Rugby Union because of the South African Academy opening up in Ellisdale on its doorstep. I'm also aware that Eagles Academy is about to be launched now as well. So these unions are launching their own academies besides the South African Academy, and it's the way to go professional. They will be successful. They are going to do wonders for rugby in the South and the Eastern Cape, the academies. Just to add to the issue about the academies.
President, just to assist you, would like you to give us that undertaking that speaks about rent to rent, so that we must assist you on this day. But I want to, with the last clarity. Is this academy at the place where you told us last time when you were here that it is going to be in that place? Because we clapped hands when you said it's going to be in that area, and then it was a very strategic and a good area. We just want to know, is it there? And the other thing is that really would like to get that undertaking from those people, so that at least when you meet with the DG, we must at least have water on the ground for you a little bit.
Mr. Chairman, the answer is a simple yes. It's the same Ellisdale site. In fact, SA Rugby has already spent almost 2 million rand on that project by way of getting all sorts of diagrams, paths, surveyors, all the pre-ground work that's necessary has already gone into that, so that that there is a commitment there. However, I would be, and I'm not going to lie to this house, I've seen what happens. The truth of the matter is that there is still a question over the location. I mean, Mr. Frolic knows we've been to that location. What concerns me and those of us who have been there is the logistics of distance. We are concerned that it's going to, you know, it's going to. And I mean, the location is fantastic. Alice Dale is fantastic, Mr. Chairman. The Minister of Sport, we know, has a great passion for that location. But the challenge going forward in a relatively poor area is how do we transport those boys from the townships of Port Elizabeth and all over Eastern Province to Alice Dale. So that is the challenge that we face. Maybe there's a solution, but it's a question that we have to ask ourselves, or else we will be very careless. I mean, we just have to think back to the grand apartheid scheme of putting people, hundreds of miles away from their work. Today we are paying the price for that. So we need to be careful. We have learned from the past, and we don't want to commit the same mistakes.
Check it to that, President. Cedric and then Solo, noted. But I was hesitant to give you. No, I should wait a little bit. Yes, Cedric.
Chairperson, you know, in terms of this academy, I think the original intention was that it will be a SARU national academy that we're talking about, right, and not a provincial academy, right? Now, in terms of the location there, I think there were other contractual issues also, because the property per se belongs to a private individual. And that is where the difficulty is going to come when you start putting government resources in and funding in, because it's against the Public Finance Management Act to put up infrastructure on a private individual's property. It's going to create immense problems. But I want you to clarify the issue, because there were a lot of rumors going around in the Eastern Cape and in Port Elizabeth, Utnake area specifically, that a decision was or is to be taken by SARU to relocate that academy to the university in Port Elizabeth. What is the current status in terms of the location? Because I fear a situation, Chairperson, that we'll have a long discussion about the location that's also open-ended. By when will a final decision be taken? Because if you go and negotiate now with the Department of Sport and Recreation and also through the National Lottery that has money available for infrastructure development, the issue will finally come up. On whose property is this? Are we putting down infrastructure that after 20 years or 25 years we'll be told that your lease has expired, you must move on now? Are we going to develop in private property, or are we going to use state land, which wherever it is available, Chairperson, to put up this facility?
Mr. Chairman, the situation is that it is still the same. It hasn't, nothing has changed. And I think we're waiting for our chairman's meeting with the DG. And I think Mr. Solik has highlighted a very important challenge for us now. If government can't support us on private property, then that already gives us a repellent away from Mr. Gardner's property. So we are very pleased that you brought that to our attention. We certainly don't want to spend money where we can't spend it on private property. But for the time being, I can assure the committee that there are no plans to relocate to the university. In fact, when we did the tender system, Mr. Chume was in the chair for that. We invited tenders. The university was one of those who came to tender as well. So there were a number of people who tendered for that project at the time. SA Rugby hasn't made another decision, I can assure the House.
Hey, President, if you have been desperate around that, Cedric is raising a PFMA matter. You have to look at the option of the private public partnership. Then you are able to retain that piece of land and all that. But then you have not to make it an individual, because now with the triple P will kick in, then government, you have now responded to the PFMA and all those other things. Then that's your leeway. But if it is compeller's property and then you put up that it's having a problem itself, so I must give away that land, or I must purchase, I must say, my role here is to give the land. And then say the role of SARU is to put the structure and all those other things, and then we get into that kind of operational agreement and all that. Then it is workable in terms of government policy and how it works. It's just that look into those various options and see how can you go. So that at least I've seen you getting very red when Cedric raised the issue of the private land, and then I said, no, let me ease you that, no, you can go for triple P option, so that at least you get comfort a little bit on that. Yeah, Bangilis, let me just say it.
Thank you very much.
Wait, Bangilis. I'm saying, I'm giving you Bangilis because you are an alternate to the other committee. You are a member of this, only on those bases. But if there was any other base, I would have never given you. Now, so I'm just giving you on those bases. Ah.
I would like to break confidence, Chairperson, out of our little discussion in the House. I'm not going to do that. I respect your ruling as my leader. Look, I wanted to ask firstly the reason of going to Alice Dale. I thought you were talking about Alice. I would have asked the same question, be that as it may. I think that was explained. I also find myself in a quite difficult predicament, arising out of my colleague, Comrade Selvig, have said. I grew up in the Eastern Cape. It was a great achievement for those people indeed. I know that there's a tourism project there, a big investment by environment, the Department of Environment. I don't know what relationship do you have with them. But to my disappointment, Chairperson, with due respect, when it comes to all these things about infrastructure, sustainability, these costs of running that, but it's not very far. I know it's not very far from Port Elizabeth. I just traveled by train from P to Kerong. I played rugby, by the way. I decided to travel by train to Kerong. Parliament does not pay for that. Can't even claim. RDP House is next to the railway station. And almost half of those houses are empty. And I was asking myself, most probably the people have moved because it's not far from Port Elizabeth. But anyway, I think your feasibility study was well conducted, and probably by putting that establishment there in relating to what the Environment Department is investing would probably bring those people from PE back to Alice Dale. But I think we have to give serious thinking on this matter. But with your respect, I would like to see something happening in Alice Dale. But as you know yourself, Alice Dale and Cookhouse and Rosemead are just, they were railway towns. Really, there was no plan to develop them further than that. Now that we've got a company, what is it called? Transnet. Yeah, they're not interested in that nonsense of job creation. They're more interested in profits. Now, I'm not sure whether there's still strong thinking of having those areas as you know, self-sustainable towns, because I'm worried about the whole question of infrastructure. And I don't think, Chair, I'm not trying to influence you. It would be wrong to have the thing in Port Elizabeth, UP, what is called Nelson Mandela now, because we actually do our shopping in PE, and it makes our lives very easy. I mean, speaking on behalf of Credoc, even Norfolk in Northern Cape, they want to go to PE. If there's a big institution there, but I'm not influencing your decision. But be that as it may be, I think we need to look into all those factors and make sure that we have a sustainable institution there. Thank you very much.
No, I think those were comments. I think those were comments that the Honourable Mr. Solo made that will be part of the unfolding discussion at the end of the day. What is important for us is to see that an institute is set up that will benefit Rakhi in the country and in the region as cost effective as possible. Because if we are going to waste resources on travelling, then those resources could have benefited other needy areas where assistance is needed. So it's ultimately a decision that has to be taken. A final decision must be taken by SARU, and the way forward must be mapped out after the meeting between the MD and the DG of Sport. But let's continue the discussion and see how far we get with it. Mr. Nula.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The President, in his presentation, made mention of the legacy project in Transkei. And Transkei is quite a huge area. And according to the statistics that Dr. Basson has, which is also going to be highlighted here in the presentation that he's going to make, it is quite clear that if one talks of black players, it's in the Transkei. And unfortunately, people in border always think when they speak of border, they just think of East London and King Liam's Trans. Whereas if one goes to Transkei, and the study we've done there is that it's a huge area, which we've divided into 12 hubs, which is going to make it easy for us. But one of the critical areas, then, Mr. Chairman, and I'm mentioning it here at this forum, because I know the government has got funds for infrastructure development, is the whole issue of facilities. And it's going to be pointless for us to embark on skills development programs and providing equipment to clubs and so on whilst there are no facilities. I don't know, Mr. Chairman, whether it will be possible for us as SA Rugby to have an agreement with the government when it comes to the issue of facilities. Because if we are to make this this legacy project successful, there will have to be quite a huge amount of work and money done on the issue of facilities. Thanks, Mr.
Chairperson, before I hand over to you, Sivelele, in the new Sports and Recreation Amendment Act, it states clearly there, it's a clause that says that all federations must enter into performance agreements with the government. Now, I don't know if through the Department of Sport and Recreation, South Africa, the SARU has been engaged on this matter. Because those are the issues that must be threshed out, right? It's correct what you say about the Transkei area and the development of sport there. But we must also move away from the notion that you need world-class facilities all over the show for our people to play sport. Playing open space is sometimes more effective. You can ask the president of SARU, he was in Helensvale in Port Elizabeth. There was not even grass on the field, but those kids played rugby. And that is the field that they use. So although we would all strive to have all these beautiful facilities everywhere, it's not the facility that leads to human development. It's what you put into the human being who must ultimately make use of any facility that is there. But that is something that must be taken up, Chairperson, in terms of that performance agreement. And I hope the MD, if they haven't done so yet, must just sensitize or ask the DG when you meet with her about this performance agreement and the readiness of South African Rugby to put forward their proposal and for the government to buy in where buy-in is possible. Over to you, Chairperson.
Just a last point before we go off, Mr. Chairman. As a federation, we come to you for help if you can. The honourable members have indicated the serious need, especially amongst poor clubs in the area. And there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of black clubs who are in dire need in the Eastern Province, in the Eastern Cape generally. The problem in the Eastern Province is the unlocking of the lotto funding. Now, because of the problems that were created by maladministration of Eastern Province and eventually the sacking of the CEO, and he's still got a criminal case which is part heard, the lotto decided to freeze all funding of all levels, including clubs. Now, Mr. Chairman, the problem with that is that it's hurting the people who need the assistance the most. We can understand the Eastern Province Rugby Union moratorium on payment to them, even though that's hard to understand even now. But the black clubs, the poorest clubs in the Eastern Province, it's years now that they have not received 1 cent from Lotto. We need you as government, as an important portfolio committee, to help us to unlock. Because as long as those poor clubs in the Eastern Province are starved of funding from the Lotto, whilst the rest of South Africa's clubs are receiving funding, it's the poor who are suffering the most.
Yes, Cedric. No, absolutely right. Yes, sir.
No. Chairperson, through you to the SARU president, we had the national lottery here in Parliament about a month ago as part of our public hearings because we asked them those type of questions. And rugby is just one of the sport codes that is affected by it in the Eastern Cape. And also elsewhere in the country, there's other codes that's affected by it. But we were given and we were pleasantly surprised by the approach of the chairperson of the board of the National Lottery, Mr. Joe Foster. And at the end of the discussion, they made it very, very clear that they are aware of the problem as far as Eastern Province is concerned. And they went so far as to say that they do not expect then these clubs to go through Eastern Province or through their union to get these things, but they can do it individually themselves. But you know what happened since then? I immediately communicated it to Mr. McCorkey. I think he's in charge of club development. And although Mr. McCorkey phones me once or twice to keep on asking me, Comrade Cedric, how far is the lottery? I told him in the first instance, get us the names of the clubs that applied for lottery funding. Because I can't go to the National Lottery and say to them, there's clubs that applied in Eastern Province, when are they getting their funding? There must be some form of record. Because Eastern Province was part of the process then. Or they have been regular meetings with the clubs and say to the clubs, you have applied, just come and give us your names. And then we can give something to the National Lottery to follow up us immediately. But up to today, that has not happened yet. I'm not sure where that process is. And through your office at South African Rugby Union, we'll appreciate it if you can take it up with the relevant officials there. Because we thought that is a quick way of assisting these clubs. That was the undertaking that the chairperson of the board, not of the distribution agency of sport, but of the board itself gave to us to say that, no, we cannot penalize these clubs. We must assist them. And they also went further to say that the National Lottery has now allowed Veleli schools who play sport to submit plans for infrastructure development on the school premises itself. Right? They're doing it in terms of a project. So where you have schools who play rugby or whatever sport and they say they don't have a facility, the National Lottery will not go and build an oval there, but they will put down a basic facility that can be used for different sport codes. So there has been movement there, but we also require the assistance from the different affiliates to give us the specifics.
We'll definitely get you that information, Mr. Vatsman, by end of this week.
And on top of that, as the rugby, South African Rugby Union, you also have the right to can apply on behalf of those people. You, as a South African Rugby Union, you can apply on behalf of those people, then you give them those. Because all other things that are going to be required in terms of auditing and all that, you'll be in a position to supply those kind of things, so there will be no problem. And also on the existing facilities, upgrading of existing facilities, President. Lottery, if you put a submission of improving an existing facility, putting the grass, putting the these pipes that are watering and all those things, they are ready to do those kind of things. And it's just that the information around lottery, it's as scarce as any other thing that you can't understand. But they're beginning to give us more information around what is happening there. But that is how far we can share this information with you so that you can see. Also, on our side, we're pursuing some of the objectives that you yourself are pursuing. Let's go to... Yeah. No, I want us to deal quickly with the SABC and the Super Sport issue and then deal with those and then we can go to Dr. Basson now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen. I also meant to give apologies on behalf of our MD who's sick, Jonathan Stones, as it was he who, as the MD, initiated the project of exploiting commercial opportunities to get money. Mr. Chairman, the reality is that in the professional world that we live in sport...
Is he employed,
President? Yes.
Jonathan Stone is employed?
Yes.
He's not elected to him?
No.
Okay. Now, I'm asking you that because other board members goes to go and get funds and get 20 million. Then he gets 15% of that 20 million when he's an elected representative. And when the CEO also is going to look for funds, he's getting 7 to 10%. But I said, but it is in the performance agreement of the CEO that one function of the CEO is to go and look for the sponsors. Why do you pay them? Why do you pay him when it is his duty to look for the sponsors? So I'm asking you that because in football, that is what is happening there. Even you as the president, if you get a sponsor of 50 million from APSA, you have 10% of the 50 million right into your pocket. That is what is going on in football. So I just wanted to check with you, is that the case?
Mr. Chairman, let me state it for the record, and I'm prepared to go to jail if I tell lies on this. You don't have to send the police. I'll go to jail myself. I did not receive not 1 cent from the deal that was signed by South African Rugby. And have not received and will not receive in my tenure as the president any commission for any deals that are being done. So I'm prepared to say that to my national parliament. Thank you.
Presented the SABC Supersport.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, the motivation was to ensure funding going forward. As I said, we are competing in the professional era. And we're competing internationally. And we want to be on top of our game. We are the world champions. We want to be the world champions in 2011. And we will be the first nation to regain the Webb Ellis Trophy in New Zealand in 2011. In order for us to do that, we need money, Mr. Chairman. We have many... I'm not going to bore you with the reasons why we need money, but we need to keep our players in South Africa. It is a huge challenge. We need to fund development programs. We need to take the game to the people who have not played the game. In our country, and Dr. Basson will talk, and Mbalili Mula will talk, only 10% of our schools in this country are playing rugby. That's 1 out of 10. It's a huge challenge for us to take the game to the people of this country. The people of this country are not playing rugby. So we have a huge challenge, and we need money. I'm not saying that we only need money. We also need people, and we value people. So we don't put people below money, Mr. Chairman. Nevertheless, what we did, Mr. Chairman, is at present, our domestic competition is the Curry Cup. At present, it is in a bundle of TV rights, which is a contract with News Corp, which is a huge overseas conglomerate owned by the very wealthy man, Mr. Murdoch. You will recall that deal was signed in 1995 by Dr. Louis Leighton. Now, the Curry Cup is part of that bundle, the Tri-Nations and the Super Series, Super 10, Super 12, Super 14. What we did, Mr. Chairman, in terms of our contract, we saw an opportunity which was initiated by the MD to unbundle that. Our competitors, New Zealand and Australia, did not see that. We saw it. We saw an opportunity to unbundle that. Because if we stayed as a three nation and we continue to do our TV deals as a Sansa, we are sharing equally. We're only getting one third of the TV rights if we stay with New Zealand, Australia and ourselves. So what we did was we separated our domestic competition, the Curry Cup.
and we decided to negotiate with SuperSport. Now, SuperSport is our existing partner. Now, you can understand, Mr. Chairman, that this is a sensitive issue. It's something that's done against the wishes of our partners, in effect. And today they are very unhappy that we have signed this agreement, because New Zealand and Australia will not get this type of deal. So we have stolen one up on them. Our MD decided to enter into negotiations with our partner to on-sell our domestic competition, Currie Cup TV rights, the Currie Cup, for double the amount of money that it is now valued. So it's a 100% increase on what we have obtained in this new deal. We believe that it's going to, when we negotiate for Tri Nations and Super 14, it's going to raise the bar for that as well, because we're going to say that if we can get so much for Currie Cup, we want so much for Tri Nations and Super 14. Mr. Chairman, since this signing of this deal, and my conscience is clear, I stand before you and I stood before my council and I explained this deal, which was accepted by South African Rugby without exception. This was a good deal for South African Rugby. And I've learned a lot about TV rights since this deal. Mr. Chairman, the crux of the matter, ladies and gentlemen, is that these deals and the nature of TV rights around the world and sport is that it does not mean that because you put out tender to obtain a partner to secure a deal that you're going to get the best price. TV rights does not work like that. Please understand that, and I'm saying this in all humility. I've only learned that. Let me repeat it. It does not mean, like other products that you put out, you know, for services, you say, put it out to tender so that you can get the lowest. Yeah, you're not going for the lowest, you're going for the highest. It does not mean, Mr. Chairman, that if you put it out to tender, that you're going to get the best deal. Because what happens in the TV world is that the competitors work together to give you the lowest price.
Getting price fixing.
Correct, sir.
Okay, no, it's okay. Collusion.
It's called collusion.
No.
It is a proven fact,
yes,
around the world. So it does not mean that if you put it out to tender that you're going to get four or five times the amount. No, it doesn't work that way. So what we did was we exploited the opportunity with our partner, knowing at the time that there was a rival in the market. The rival was not SABC or ETV or whoever. The rival was Telkom. And at that opportune time, we exploited the opportunity with our own partner to say, listen, if you don't give us the price we want, we are going to knock on the other door. So we negotiated with our partner. Today, our partner is unhappy about the price that they paid us, which is 700 million rand, just for our Currie Cup domestic competition. Mr. Chairman, I have no doubt that if we went to the market today, 2008, now, we wouldn't even get a third of that. We'll get less. And please understand, in 1995, when Louis Leite signed the first deal and Brian van Rooyen signed the second deal was substantially less than the first deal in 1995. It does not automatically mean that it's an upward trend. I am happy as the president of South African Rugby, together with my chairman who's sitting here, that we've done a good deal for South African Rugby. It's going to enable us to help our children in the game of rugby. I've got a lot more to say, but Mr. Chumi has his hand up.
So, you have addressed both the SABC and SuperSport. Okay. Yes, sir. Yes, Mr. Chumi.
No, I just wanted to address the SABC issue, but just to concretize what the President has said, currently, in the arrangement with SANZA, the TV rights, and that is Currie Cup and the inbound, we're getting 70 million a year. And that 70 million is shared almost three ways between Australia, New Zealand, in ourselves. And bearing in mind that the bigger market for the value of the TV rights is South Africa in relation to New Zealand and Australia. And this is very important. Now, having recognized that, we then said to ourselves, why do we share? Otherwise, the benefits that we should be deriving ourselves, you know, because of the nature of the market that we're operating in with others, especially if the agreement allows us to disaggregate, you know, this part of the TV activities for ourselves. Obviously, in a partnership, you want to share as much as possible because we're in a partnership. But this time around, we said, because the agreement allows for the disaggregation of this part of the activities on the TV side, we're allowed to do it, and very much against, of course, the other partners. So 70 million currently, chairperson, and 2011, this amount of money goes to 140 a year. Now, if we were not to do this, and we wait for 2011, 2010, to renegotiate this contract, we'll be lucky to get more than 20%. Because, why I'm saying so? Because the research that we have done, Chairperson and the members, is suggesting that these TV rights, as they stand, are not likely to grow more than 20% when we renegotiate them, because partly of the collusion that the President has actually raised in this. Now, coming back to SABC, part of the conditions for agreeing to sign the agreement with SuperSport was that SuperSport must share some gains with SABC on the Currie Cup. As I speak to you now, the MD is organizing a three-way meeting between ourselves, SuperSport, and SABC to concretize an agreement as to what that sharing is going to be about and on what basis is that going to take place. And that meeting has not taken place yet. It's being planned right now. So negotiations and discussions are continuing with SABC to make sure that SABC can participate in this agreement that was actually concluded. But further to that, SABC has an opportunity to participate in the 2010 negotiations that will then deal with the Tri-Nations and Super 14 competitions when the standard opens up discussions. I wanted just to add that part, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Yes, President.
Mr. Chairman, let me just also elaborate on the SABC, because SABC is important to us, very important. Or free-to-air. Free-to-air, let me say, is SABC and free-to-air in general is very important to us. Now, what we know, Mr. Chairman, what we've learned is that there's no guarantee. Cricket, we've looked at our colleagues, cricket, soccer, and other sports. There's no guarantee that if your sport is on free-to-air, that the sport will grow. There's no guarantee. We've seen that cricket has SABC on. There's no guarantee, there's no direct link of growth. There might be some growth, but one can't, you know, just shout about the numbers. The fact of the matter is that we, notwithstanding the fact that there's no guarantee that if your product is on free-to-air that it's going to grow or not grow, but we as an administration, when we came into office more than 2 years ago, Mpumelelo Thume and O'Regan Hoskins decided to engage SABC. The two of us lived in Auckland Park, and this house needs to know that. We spent much time with Dalim Bofu and Vuzo Mbebe and company, because we understand the importance of getting our product on SABC. We've discussed many possibilities with the esteemed gentleman on many occasions. We've never spent one-fifth of the time at SuperSport's offices, the time that we spent in SABC's offices. Those people know us very well there, and Mpumelelo will tell you. And we still regard the SABC as an important role player. And that is why we are still talking, and we're insisting that SuperSport must share games with SABC. In fact, as Mr. Follick had alluded to earlier on, in terms of legislation, the old Broadcast Act and now the Electronic Act that we have on our statute books, there are sports that are regarded as national
what is the sports of national importance. Now, in terms of that, there are like test matches, Super 40, Curry Cup, and a whole lot of other rugby matches that have to be put on free to air. They have to be in terms of that, because that is in terms of that legislation and in terms of the presentations that were made. So we are aware of that fact, but we are going a step further, as Mr. Chume has said. We are wanting to form a triumvirate, SABC, SuperSport, SARU, so that we can take this forward, and it's a win-win situation. By no means do we want to not have rugby on national television, on free-to-air. We want the masses to see rugby, and we want to stress that fact. We will continue to pursue this. And I just want to say from our side, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, we've done our best, and we will continue to do our best for rugby.
Just the last point, Chairperson.
Yes.
One of the tests around this tripartite alliance that we want to form is that on the 9th of August, South African rugby is celebrating former President Nelson Mandela's 90th birthday. And this game is organized as a rerun of the World Cup semifinals against Argentina at Ellis Park. Now, because of the importance of that game and the importance of the occasion, we would want to insist that that game is broadcasted throughout the country, including SABC being involved in that.
Yes, I'm
ready. Well, that's going to add, Mr. Chairman, on some of the initiatives we have with SABC around rugby. Last week, we had a discussion with a company that came to make a presentation on an innovative program, which is going to put emphasis on rural and schools, on rural schools and club rugby. They've got an agreement with SABC, whereby they're going to show this type of rugby on the TV every day and during the prime time. So in a way, I'm trying to say, Mr. Chairman, we're really trying our damnedest best to get involved with SABC, because we realize that's a channel that will be able to take rugby, you know, to all the parts of the country and mostly to the rural areas where there's no super sport.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, is there clarity on what has been presented around the SuperSport and the SABC? Cora? No clarity. And Cedric?
Chairperson, can we just hear from Mr. Chume in terms of radio broadcasts? Because, you see, sometimes I find it very useful on a Saturday afternoon when you can't sit in front of the TV and you drive far in the rural areas to listen to the radio. How is radio broadcast affected by this deal?
Mr. Vice Chair, it's it is an issue that that's on the table as well. We as a federation have indicated it to both SABC and to in our last meeting that I attended with SABC, we indicated that we want to hear much more broadcasting in the vernacular. Of rugby matches, and SABC people said that they were going to work on it, because as I understand it, I've tried to tune in as well, just to see how the only language I could pick up was Afrikaans, so we did rugby in the vernacular languages as well. No, we have taken that up.
Now, President, I think the issue raised by Comrade Cedric, it's very important. We didn't get any 10% from SABC, but we want to be honest with you. We are biased to the SABC. Biased to the SABC on basis of the infrastructure that the SABC has vis-a-vis the SuperSport. We don't have anything around SuperSport. Quality, pictures, and professional work. But it's only limited in as far as not even the 10% of the English-speaking of this country are concerned that are able to go there. Whereas on the SuperSport pay channel and all those things. But what is more serious
is what Comrade Cedric is raising, which was our concern when we were at loggerheads with the SuperSport and the PSL. We have never supported SuperSport up until they explained a number of things, but we said we understand. But the fact of the matter is that when I drive and listen to Lesedi stereo, I listen to Lakika Achade doing rugby in a vernacular. Listen to Africans, listen to anybody doing rugby in Xhosa. Yes, Zolani doing rugby in Xhosa. That is what is important about the whole thing. It is not about... yes, President.
So sorry to interrupt you. Something I must not forget to tell this committee. I need your help. In our last meeting with the SABC, the question was asked of them, are you able, as the SABC, should SuperSport agree to give you Curry Cup? Now, you know the Curry Cup, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, is coming up next week. It starts next week. This week. Yes, thank you. Now, the question was asked, if SuperSport is prepared to give you Curry Cup matches so we can have top-class rugby on our free-to-air, the masses can see rugby. SABC, Mr. Mbebe said, no, I can't show it. Even if SuperSport gives games, I can't do it. I've got no space.
This was
a few weeks ago. Mr. Rotenbach and Mr. Alexander were with me. I went to take the new leadership to introduce them to the SABC, not to SuperSport. Never went first to SuperSport. We went to SABC to introduce the new leadership. And SABC, Mr. Mbebe said, and Mr. Rotenbach will bear me out, you hear how emotional I get about this issue. They said, there's no space, even if you give us games from SuperSport, we can't put Curry Cup on SABC, there's no space. And we still said, but can't you take Soapy off? He said, no, that's more important than rugby.
Now, I think that information is right, because why are we pushing you to go the SABC route? Why are we pushing in that way? And we are pushing you, stretching you to the limit to go to the SABC, because we have a national objective around the SABC as a national broadcaster. And then the second thing is that, how do you stimulate interest in this game when you go and close it in a private channel and then you don't open up to the public broadcaster? So that it is not about, President, about the best rate that you get about that. No. One of the central obligations of the rugby and SABC is to make these people to be best to the sport and stimulate their interest so that at least they must understand the sport. So without that, they will never. And the infrastructure of the 9 languages that is existing in SABC is unparalleled to any other channel in this country. SuperSport doesn't have that. So we'll always push you in that way and say, but why are you not going the SABC route? Because they've built infrastructure for years. And today it's existing, it's doing very well, but what shut it? Those kind of statements shut that infrastructure, that it must not exist, and anybody who's just angry will go to SuperSport. And can we accuse that person by people are saying, no, we don't have a space for that? No. No. Can you imagine? 3 channels. Then they have no space. But the time when we called you 2 weeks ago, SABC was here. You remember?
Yeah.
We have called them. Unfortunately, you had to have the interview of the coach through the satellite, and then you had this... The assistant coach is something like that. And then you had another occasion for the launching of the Curry Cup. So that has put us outside, because we wanted to deal with those things in the presence of the SABC and yourself, so that when Buzo is back, because he was outside the country, we must be able to say, can you bring us these answers from Buzo or Tali about this thing? But we'll pursue the issue of the SABC. But we were saying, we are very clear about the issue of the SABC.
for the interest of the majority of the people in this country who can't speak English, who can't listen to, who can watch on the television. Somebody staying right in the middle of Natal Midland opens up the television and the radio and listen to football and listen to rugby and listen to cricket. But if we don't do that, this is the only channel that is in a position to do that. The SABC only, no any other. Now, if they treat people in that way, it means we'll have to shut down. And people will go where they are treated in a decent and better negotiation. They'll rather have negotiated with you a different thing rather than any other. But all the same, it's okay. It's okay. Let's go to the last input now. Dr. Basson, I think there you're going to raise a number of things now. We're going to the meat now of the whole issue now of transformation now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
But I want you to speak as frank as you used to do with us.
Friendly, okay.
Yes. As frank as you used to do with us.
Yeah,
so we've taken all the things that you used to say to us and all that. And when you ask people, they can't answer. You'll find that they're jumping like a rat and then they can't answer those questions because let me tell you why we said that. We have called all president of the Super 14. President Hoskins was there. We're asking them, why are you making it difficult for the national coach to nominate or to elect players? Because it's you in the provinces who are refusing to transform. And transformation means a player identify, constantly fielding it and supporting it and doing everything. But President Hoskins, the provinces are not doing that. And now when the national coach has to choose a national team and the teams are all lily white, should we squeeze him the last drop to go out and that drop should be black for him to get a black players there? When a cartel of 14, the Super 14 players, they are doing what you call this thing, what you call SAB is doing with the ETV. But they are conniving your Super 14 teams. All of them conniving. They say, no, we'll take one. And the other one said that, no, for now I'm not going to take any. And renegade this responsibility. But, you know, they have a shock of their life. Have you seen this act, President? The Sports Amendment Act. I think you have to read the Sports Amendment Act. You've studied. So we're going to handle them and knuckle them with a neck, and they will finally conform to this. I'm happy that it has been passed, and then there will be no two ways about it. But they will conform to this act. It's an act for the land. It is governing everybody, and anybody who's driving at 60 kilometers per hour, it drives at 120. There are consequences for that. So anybody who breaches the law, there will be consequences around that. I'm not saying the national rugby, but I'm saying everybody in sports. But I want to target, our agenda will be targeting provincial Super 14s and see to what extent are they prepared to conform to this. Babuchu. As a national chairman, tell them that I think they will never be the part that we're swimming in this present now, and we are going to implement this to the latter. Dr. Basson, it's just that you quickly stimulate me around the things that you raised the other time. And one of the things that you raised was the provinces are not doing enough to develop so that at least our own requirement of this act on democracy, representation, and all that as required by the Constitution. Anybody who's a clever person will see parts of this, by and large, are drawn out of the Constitution on equity and all those things. It's not a thumbsuck. And therefore, we are saying people have to comply in terms of what the Constitution requires and in terms of what. We can't have a country that is swimming in apartheid and say, no, let's leave it like that. No. When you get into a country, it's in apartheid state, you change it. the change will be a difficult and unwanted process. But you must have a change. You can't just sit there and say, no, I'm antagonizing other people. Then it means then there could have never been voted and changed this country and become a democratic country. Even in event other people are screaming, and then it becomes your worry. No, it can't be like. We know that there will be others who are going to cry in the midst, but it is for the betterment of the country, not for individuals. Dr. Basson?
Thank you, Chairman. I will be frank as usual. This is one of the more friendlier meetings that we've had with you than in the recent past. So allow me also to thank you for that. We almost feel comfortable. I'm presenting to you, and I think Mr. Nkula has circulated to you written copies of what I'm going to present to you. We, Mr. Nkula and myself, we are partners in crime on the transformation charter, so he might chip in if I leave something out and maybe add a few comments at the end of the day. Let me start off in saying that when we introduced the Transformation Charter, your committee was one of the first in a political sense that have subscribed and applauded us on the way that we are approaching transformation. And that has encouraged us to stay loyal to our Transformation Charter and to make sure that we do get it into the provinces. 14 provinces, and you've already mentioned one this afternoon. It is a wide range of attitudes towards transformation, which in certain instances is politically motivated and influenced. So it's not an easy job, but we are definitely making progress, as you'll see as I go through. Just to remind you again, we have got a six-dimensional process to make sure that we do get demographic change, that it's not something that's just plucked out of the air. We
just to remind me, you said, when were you here?
In November
last year.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Okay.
And those six areas three of those areas are targeted at increasing the rate of demographic change and also to extend the demographic profile of rugby in the country. The access improvement dimension and the skills and capability improvement area or dimension and the community involvement area are the three drivers that will bring demographic change in a sensible and a sustainable way forward. The other two dimensions, the employment equity one and the preferential procurement dimensions, that is rugby's social responsibility that it's fulfilling. So we are focusing our demographic change processes by stimulating and looking at that access improvement, skill and capability improvement, and extensive community involvement. The analysis of the 2006 transformation data, that is the data that we collected after we saw you in 2006, had a major influence on South African rugby to the extent that became a motivating force, and those questions were also asked from your portfolio committee. The transformation charter has found its way now into the overall strategy for South African rugby. So it's not something that's standing on the side. It's now an integral part of the strategy.
Just hold on, President, and the new people that have taken office now, what is the attitude of those gentlemen, honorable gentlemen, around this issue of the charter and the transformation? Because there is a little bit of a disturbing noise in part of your leadership around this transformation there. What is their view? I'm honest with you. I just want to get it from you. Maybe they say it in the toilet in your absence, but what is the attitude of this new leadership around transformation? Are they irritated? And then what is it? Because there are disturbing signals that I'm getting from this leadership. I just want to hear.
I'm going to ask my vice president to speak.
Okay.
And that's his maiden speech in front of this committee.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I came from a very small province, but they are playing in the Currie Cup. It's the Falcons Rugby Union. And to answer your question is, I'm very proud to say that I myself appointed Mr. Peter de Villiers as the first Currie Cup coach. Excuse me? Vision, that's totally correct. I'm very happy to say that he started his Currie Cup career at the Falcons, and he was there for 2 years. And after he left, I appointed Mr. John Williams, that's now currently the coach of Namibia. And I think to answer your question, what do I think about transformation, I think that's very important, and I'm the first one that will support transformation forever, and I think I proved it when I was the president of the Falcons. Also, I just, for clarity's sake, I took a photo last week and I sent it to my president at the test at Bloemfontein, and of the current Springboks or who are involved with the current Springbok side, it was myself, Peter de Villiers, Peter Maimane, that's also involved there, and also Adrian Jacobs and Konrad Janke. So I'm very proud to say that I'm very involved with the transformation process.
No, it's pleasing, but you are way above anybody else. If you appointed Peter de Villiers, when Peter de Villiers has been a villain to many, I think you have set the pace in this country. But I'm saying this on record to the president and you as the vice president. There's a disturbing tone within the new leadership around this agenda, president of the transformation. And it has never been there. It has been the will to move on this transformation, because let me remind comrades, one of the new member there is saying, no, I know Chairperson is my friend, I know the minister, we've been together, so there will be nothing, and then leave this issue of the transformation. And they asked me about that. I said that I don't even know that gentleman that you're speaking about, and but there's one thing that I will not compromise, is to make sure that we doing a redress in this country, not a token, not a window shopping, window dressing president, a typical world-class type of the boys that are playing in the Springbok. That is what we want, and then we want nothing less than that. And that's what, but I'm just saying to you, there is that disturbing noise in the new leadership, and I want to be on record that I will, maybe it will find its way to me one day.
No, Mr. Chairman, I'm really happy. You know, I'm pleased when you and the committee bring these matters to our attention, because this, we're in a partnership. And, you know, these things are welcomed with open arms. And we need to deal with this thing together. Because if we deal with it together, we stand a better chance of succeeding. But I know that new people bring new dimensions and so on. But I want to think that as far as transformation is concerned, that we will not slow down. Mr. Chairman, I think that I also want to just mention that if we look at the emerging South African team playing in Europe at the moment, you know, they're on the verge of winning that tournament. It's a very transformed team, or it's a team representing all of South Africa. On Wednesday evening at 8:15, our baby box are playing in the semi-finals. It's on TV. On transfer support, yeah. you know, they're playing in the semi-finals of the World Cup against England. If they win that game, you know, and then of course the senior team is
proud of them. We'll receive them at the airport.
Yes.
But you see, President, let me just conclude so that I must give Dr. Basson around your development program. There is no doubt about it. I can tell you now, Cora will agree with me. There's no doubt about your development. But your biggest problem, you say these ladies are just disappearing when they're supposed to break the ceiling. I can tell you, you have these boys who won the World Cup and then won it and defend it and all those things. They're the same as these boys now who are going for the final thing. But present, at the end of the day, where do these boys disappear? That is where our problem is. And that is what Dr. Basson is going to speak about and say, at the end of the day, in such a transformed team, where do they go at the end of the day? We want to trace them so that Nula must go and fetch them where they've gone, so that they must come here to people so that we must know about them. Dr. Basson, over to you. You're just creating stimulating many
yes,
discussions.
Right. I'll start, Mr. Chairman. So the transformation charter really was the driving thing between driving force behind reviewing SARU's strategy. And in that process of reviewing SARU's strategy, transformation has now become an integral part of strategy. You remember at our last meeting, Cora gave me a very hard time, and Mr. Mula said, "No, it's all very nice having the transformation charter, but tell me, how are you going to bring about the change?" So now, being part of the strategy, we've taken care of that.
Honorable Cora.
Let me also say, before I get stuck into the meat of the thing, is we must always keep in mind that commercial forces has got a huge impact on the rate of transformation at the highest level of rugby. Because
what do you mean by commercial
forces? The commercial forces related to winning the Currie Cup competition, winning the Super 14, it's almost dominating. Because MDs and CEOs and coaches, they take decisions that is in their own minds oriented towards that. So that is the thing that we have to deal with. But it is an important factor. Now, we have finished the 2006 data and information. We are in the process of analysing the 2007 data, and already the 2008 season is almost passed. But already, as you'll see from what I'm going to give you, there is huge progress in certain areas, and I'll highlight it. As part of the process that's currently on the go, we have got one-on-one meetings with each one of the provinces. So Mr. Lula and myself, as soon as we've received the information and data from a province, we set up a meeting with the province, and then we go and discuss and debate what does those figures and those graphs mean. And Mr. Lula can confirm that. At each and every session that we've attended thus far, the whole leadership of that province, the CEO, the president, the transformation committee, and the executive committee, it is very well attended meetings. Simply because we look and we analyze and we make plans how to deal with the weaknesses. And this will be followed up by in October, in November. We will have, on the basis of the information that's been gathered, we'll have everybody coming together, all the provinces, and then we'll deal on a collective basis on where are the weaknesses, where are the holes in the systems. And the feedback that we discuss and debate with the provinces are listed there on pages 1 and 2. But I just want to get a few out. An important point that is discussed with them in the feedback session are the trends and the rates of change, of demographic change that's taking place. So we have long sessions of debate on those issues. We also discussed with the individual provinces their transformation status relative to those of the other provinces, because there is a huge divide in transformation status in the country. What we've seen and have confirmed, and as I reported to you last time, is the north-south divide, where we've got a transformation that has gone far down the line in the south, and particularly in the Eastern Cape, where black participation at clubs and schools is in excess of 70%, whereas in the north we're sitting with 10-15% of black participation at schools and clubs. So it's a huge divide. The longer term future is extremely important from our competitive point of view, that we accelerate the infrastructure that we put into place in the Eastern Cape, because my prognosis is that 15 to 20 years from now, if we survive, that is where the power of South African rugby is going to be. If you look at the statistics and those people that are interested in analyzing it, rugby is dying at about a rate of 10 to 15% per annum in the north, without a doubt. So our long-term future lies in the Eastern Cape and in the Western Cape in particular. The other point of discussion which is very important is to elevate the importance and the power of the transformation committees that are in place in the provinces. One of the reasons why the rate is impeded in the provinces is that we have transformation committees, and I think the portfolio committee at one point in time also remarked, because of the state of transformation in the transformation committees, is that the white man has made transformation the black man's problem. So it's well transformed, but it's not really active committees that has got teeth. So part of the process now also is to give transformation committees in the provinces teeth, the watchdogs, in terms of those issues that are raised that need attention, that they can deal with it. The October-November meeting, all the provinces will then deal with the collective rates of change. Where are the obvious areas where we have to have collective intervention, and where are the areas and in which provinces are the unique problems, in specific problems that we have to deal with. The realization that rugby communities is one of the big things that have come out, particularly in the north, is there's a strong realization that rugby communities today is not necessarily going to be the rugby communities 20 years from now. And that is a very definitive trend that is establishing itself in the northern parts of the country. Clubs in the north, most of them are under severe pressure in terms of survival. Most of them, unlike in the south of the country, have got no under 20 or under 21 teams. The first team or the second team or the group of people playing in the first league in the competition in clubs in the north are artificially kept alive, and there's not strong enough efforts in the communities, and particularly I'm mentioning by name in the Pretoria area, it's the Atteridgevilles and the Mamelodis in those areas, where new rugby infrastructures, which is on the doorstep, that needs to be developed. So that, a major issue that is emerging is rugby communities 20 years from now are not the ones that we are going to know as we are today. There is a strong reason, therefore, to believe that the process that we've engaged upon, because it's now part of the national strategy, is not maybe, but will impact in the next 2 to 3 years more visibly than it's already happening on rugby. Some of the factual demographic-related information that is emerging is that collectively, approximately 53% of all rugby players at the junior club level are black. So 53% are black at junior school right across the country. At the senior school level, 44% of senior school rugby players are black. 40% of coaches at the senior school level and 41% of coaches at the junior school are black. And as the president just now mentioned, the alarming thing is, and the serious thing is that only 10% of schools in South Africa have got access to rugby. Now that is a very serious thing in terms of building a sustainable thing, particularly if you look at the rate at which rugby is disappearing at white schools. As the demographics in a school changes, virtually overnight, it switches over to soccer, simply because the homework is not being done in those areas. Over 50% of under 16 provincial teams are black. 45% of provincial under 18 academy teams are black. And then from an under 18 to an under 21 level at a provincial level, more than 40% are black. So at an underage level, at schools and at clubs, the process is moving. I anticipate a 5% increase in those figures, percentage points wise, for the 2007 year. At the underage national level, that is SA schools, the SA amateur, the under 19, under 21, which the president has referred to, most of them are in excess of 50% black. So the conclusion that you don't have to be a rocket scientist to come is, and also, of course, the national women's and the seven teams are all more than 50% black. Management, referees, and coaching structures are on average 40% black. However, the most visible part of rugby, Currie Cup, Vodacom, and Super 40, sits at only 15 to 20%. And the question is, what is happening to those boys? There is a huge dropout. After school, rugby loses approximately 70% of its players. For a variety of reasons. The club structures is disappearing. There are no club structures, and I say again in the north, not in the south. In the north club structures, there are no under 19 and under 21 competitions. So unless the school boy, after leaving matric, cannot walk into the club's first team, there is no way for him to go. So it's a serious, serious strategic weakness. And I think, particularly at the senior level, leadership level, that weakness has been recognized. So we are now focusing on how to deal with that large dropout. The approach is a three dimensional, very holistic approach, whereby from an under 9, under 11 level, those kids that can possibly play for South Africa or for a Super 14 team, the system that's now going to be operational as from the end of the year, will go out and identify those. Everyone that can possibly, from a very young age, be possibly play for South Africa will come into this incubator, the high performance management system. And that child or that promising young person will not only be dealt with in his rugby environment. Because another mistake is why the dropout occurs. You only look at the potential Springbok or Super 14 player as in his rugby environment. You don't look into his social environment. You don't manage his family environment. There are no support structures, socially, financially, or legally, in terms of making sure that potential Springbok or Super 14 player can reach the top. So this incubator system will therefore concentrate on making sure that once a person has been identified, and as I say, from a very young age to move up in the thing, he will be taken care of and nurtured. It's the only way that we are going to prevent this dropout taking place. And if we don't do that, then the Super 14 and the Currie Cup teams will remain 15 to 20% black represented. And we can see that with the what's in the pipeline already, and the way that the Springbok team and all the others are currently performing, we can see already the material is there. It's just how do you manage that material. So the demographic process, the change process is in place and it's happening. There are individual provinces where we are going to have to work a little bit harder in terms of working on the attitudes a little bit harder and change it. And I think once the portfolio committee starts with their visits, the one that you promised last year, one-on-one to the provinces, that is going to have a huge impact because, where they will want, we'll be dealing with what are the problems that you're facing. And we'll see attitudes and we can start putting on some screws as well. The other, the dimensions that that influence the rate of transformation, that is access, skills development, and community involvement, is not, we are not performing well enough. So once we start accelerating, and because our system measures it, we can monitor where it is. So there are interventions now on the table to make sure that access is improvement, that access is improved, that skills development is improved, and particularly community involvement, to get the new structures into place in cooperation with local and with provincial government on those areas. That is a huge focus area that's going to take place. And Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to report on behalf of the council and the company that the two social responsibility dimensions, the employment equity and the preferential procurement performance, we are far exceeding the targets that we set. We are exceeding it to such an extent that we believe that we've set the targets too low. So in October, the targets will go up. So preferential procurement in 80% of the provinces, more than 50% of what is being procured outside to outside contractors is towards empowered black companies or black-owned companies. So they are responding very well to that one. And then, of course, the employment equity is also in good shape as far as that is concerned. Out of all of this, Mr. Chairman, the last page or second last page, there are a number of issues, and I'm not going to go through them. I'm going to just highlight the few that I believe are the important ones which requires intervention. The second one on the list there, the serious one, 10% of schools only play rugby. That is a huge challenge. Rugby will not survive if that remains the national average. That in the 14 provinces, there were only two provinces where there's been an increase in school rugby players over the last 8 years. Eastern Cape, massively, and in the Western Cape. In all other provinces, there has been a decline in number of rugby players at a school level. So if we're not going to get stuck into the 90% of schools that has not had an exposure or where there's not access to rugby, we have got a serious long-term problem. The third item is that rugby at the school level, and that's a major challenge for us, in terms of the changes that's taking place or in the process of taking place, government responsibility for mass participation at the school level, the role of central government, the role of provincial government, the facility provision thing that's now switched back to a central government. There's huge coordination and alignment problems between national and provincial federations and the different government structures. There's a lot of confusion and there's a lot of hard work that lies ahead for us in that area. The other one that I want to address is number six, transformation or changing the demographic profile and changing your structures in the process as well is a very expensive process. And as we shared with each other at the last meeting, transformation is central to government policy. And from a rugby perspective, we need government to participate in our transformation process. There is not enough money to do normal development work, to keep the game on the go, to keep your players. It's a very, very costly thing. And simply because it's central to government policy, and government is supporting transformation in all other areas, whether it's education or health, we need to be, and I think the President said, we need the government as a partner in our initiative. We've been working long enough now with each other to know we are serious. The leadership is committed, but it's becoming more and more difficult to be able to progress the rate of transformation. And that includes lottery and all the other funds and all the other things that are at our disposal. The second one that I just want to highlight is we are developing. We are transforming. You can see it. But rugby playing facilities, and you're right, Mr. Vice Chairman, it's not highfalutin facilities, but there's a huge emerging facility shortage that's on the horizon. So we are in the process of creating huge expectations, particularly if we're going to tackle the 90% of schools that are not playing rugby. So we're creating expectations in which rugby simply cannot fulfill. So that is a massive problem that we need to address. The second last one is volunteer development as part of our transformation thing, and you know it. There are no trained volunteers in the communities. So as part of the strategy that's now one of the strategy component parts of SARU is that the development of human capital at the volunteer management administrator level is a massive focus point. Because we're not going to get transformation if there are not people to buy those things at the grassroots level. And then, Mr. Chairman, the last one, just to reiterate, the socio-economic changes that are threatening and challenging the survival of historically successful clubs is becoming very serious. So the rate at which we have to create rugby infrastructure, club in new communities, not do it outside of the communities, and to let what has historically been there, it will just die a natural death. In 20 years, it will just not be there because the activity are going to be in the new communities. So, Mr. Chairman, before I ask Mbalele to say something and or to add, the process is healthy. It is sustainable. Our data collection mechanisms have been mechanized and automated, regular feedback. We interface with the provinces, and we are definitely moving forward, without a doubt.
Thank you. Cora.
Thank you.
Honorable Cora.
You know, when it comes to transformation, I'm sorry, I take off my gloves. I don't apply any rules. You see, if you take what this document is saying on page 2, some of the factual demographic-related information in math, you come to point 11 when considering Vodacom Curry Cup Super 14. You come to performance in other five dimensions of the transformation plan can be summarized as follows. I just want to take your second paragraph here. This problem will be addressed by relooking SARU's funding policies and also to explore other sources of funding. You also talk about class structure disappeared. I ask me why. You see, you can have all these documents. You are going to produce other documents. Your problem with SARU, you've got a constitution, mother body, provinces got other constitutions. Nothing for them. You don't have a mechanism to apply to change this status quo, which you mentioned here on the Super 14, on the CARICAP, because you can't tell them. They've got their own constitution, and then you, with your constitution, you can't call them to order. You see, and you see, the development in rugby is very disturbing. You know, when the president of rugby abdicates his responsibilities, that is a serious problem. If the president says,
What do you mean, honorable member?
No, allow me, I'm on the floor. I'm on the floor. The floor is mine. I'm going to substantiate what do I mean.
Okay, sir.
Yes. Please, there's a chairperson. You president, there's a rugby. Yeah, we've got a chairperson. Your abdication of your responsibility when it says, when RS was under attack by intervening in the selection of teams, you said you'll never interfere in the selection, you take whatever comes. Now, if the head of rugby says that, then it sends another signal to me.
You're wrong.
Wait.
I'll give
you a chance. Mark his points down. You see, Honorable President, you're ready to go further when the village was appointed as coach. What did you say then? You said you did not consider only. No. Allow me to speak.
But you must also let me respond. You made so many points.
Right, Cora. But you're speaking to me. You don't speak to President.
No, I'm quoting the President.
Yeah, but when you talk to him, then you're creating a dialogue. You must talk to me.
Allow me to speak, because before this thing gets out of me.
No, Cora. But I'm saying you must address me, not the President.
I don't have a problem addressing you.
Okay.
I'm saying the comments of the president when the village was appointed as coach was that they did not consider only rugby. Now that to me was an insult on that man.
No, you're wrong.
You can be. You see, I might not respond, but you keep on interjecting.
President, I'm going to give you a chance to respond.
I'm going to forget.
No, I'm going to remind you. I'm going to remind you.
Why can't we deal with each point as
we go? No, I'm going to remind you, President.
No, it's important.
No, let's deal with him.
President, I'm saying we will give you a chance when this man is finished.
You see, the issue of cap structure disappearing. If Saru don't know what is the reason, then I can tell them. The 1992 unification process was not a process which was a proper and a fair one. Because that was a swallowing of SARU by SAFA by them. And that has made our clubs to be where they are. That's why we've got these few numbers of clubs. And if SARU is not going to look at that, that is why the clubs have disappeared. If there is a derby in the township then, before that 1992, people will go there, you'll pay a test there, and then the most of the people will be there watching those rugby, which rugby which have been played. They'll carry their test and they'll sit there. So, some of these things, we will deal and we will deal with them. This leadership will go, another leadership will go, but still if you have a constitution with no mechanisms to call people to order, this is going to happen from year to year. Let me stop there.
I will start off, Baba Cora, Honorable Cora. I have a lot of respect for you. You're old enough to be my father, so I respect you. Now we are dealing rugby with rugby matters, and we will deal with them as rugby people. First of all, when I took the decision to give the Honorable Coach de Villiers the opportunity to choose his team and not to interfere with his selection, I did that out of total respect for him and him alone. I did not do that for the previous coach, as you know. So that was done purely out of respect for de Villiers. Now, Baba, you must give me a chance now, because you said you wanted this.
Now, speak, President. Talk to me.
So,
don't talk to Cor.
So, no, I'm talking to you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I like parliamentarians. Now, secondly, the appointment of Peter de Villiers, if it wasn't for transformation, and I like Baba Cora's comment where I said we didn't only take into account rugby reasons, because the committee that was chaired by the Honorable Stofile Mike came back to tell us that the number one candidate is Heineke Meyer, not Peter de Villiers. But when we appointed Peter de Villiers, I explained the truth to the nation.
The truth of the matter was that it was not the number one candidate who was chosen. It was the number two candidate. Now, transformation is the reason why I am the president of South African Rugby today. I will never be in this position today if it wasn't for transformation. I make no apologies for transforming rugby, Baba Kora. And transformation is the reason why we appointed Peter de Villiers. It doesn't mean because you are appointed with transformation taken into account that you're not going to succeed. I have succeeded, and Peter will succeed. There's nothing wrong with that, Baba Kora. You see, the fact of the matter, Baba Kora, is that we have a long, long way to go in rugby in terms of a lot of things. But please, for heaven's sake, let us not forget the fact that this team has made our nation proud. We are world champions. We have kept South Africa on the world stage, this rugby of ours. We are going to win, the baby box will win this week. The emerging South Africa will win. The world champions are winning. They're going to win in 2011. Give some credit also. If we look at our other sports, they are far from winning. So let us also give credit. When the boys came back and we went into New Brighton Township, those quarter people, those informal settlement people there, they came out to support Amaboka Boka. It united us. It lifted the nation out of the quagmire that we faced as a nation. Xenophobia, economic collapse, strife, crime, HIV and AIDS. The one shining light is rugby. We are working for rugby, all of us sitting on this side. We are not getting paid underhand commissions. We are not taking rover cars. We are not taking commissions that the Honorable Chairman has spoken about in soccer and so on. We are doing it because we love rugby, all of us sitting here today. All we are saying, Baba Kora, is please also give us a chance. Yes, we are the whipping boys. We are condemned at every turn by people. We are never given any praise whatsoever. Please, all I'm saying is give us a little bit of credit. We are the world champions. We have made, when Baba Mbeki came to lift that trophy up there, he did it with pride. And the president of the ANC was there to support the Amaboka Boka as well. When I speak to these people, they are happy with our team. Why always be negative and whip and whip and whip and destroy? Let us take the negative with the positive as well. That is all I'm saying. Yes, my parents don't support the Springbok team. And they will die that way. I can't change them. But goodness me, I have to keep on trying. And I know that the older you are, the more bitter you are from the experience of apartheid. Because apartheid destroyed our parents and our grandparents. I can understand that. But your sons, I'm old enough to be your son. We are trying to change the sport in an honest way. All we are saying is just give us a small chance.
Cedric. Yes, God, I'm coming to you.
No, thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the presentation that Dr. Besson has made, yes, you are correct. These are some of the issues that we discussed last year in November, and also on a previous occasion we said that rugby must never forget, President, the fact that, and it will start from next year, 2009, already for full 12 months, this country and continent is going to be soccer mad. You even in some established schools find out that the number of rugby teams are in decline. Established rugby schools, and they are beginning to play football. Not only the black children, but also white children, because they are captivated by the event. So yes, there is a lot of work that needs to be done there. Now, there are two programs of the government in sport and recreation. The one is the mass participation program, which for this year has a budget of almost half a billion rand. And then there's also the school sport program, also with a substantial budget. And in both instances, towards the end of this MTF period, it will increase to 600 or 700 million rand. So there's substantial resources. And because of that, it's not only rugby that has raised the issue, or with rugby that we discussed the concept. We said that we must relook how we are dealing with sports development in the country in order to harness all these different things that government is doing on the one side, federations on the other side, towards a common purpose to address this thing of the decline in the number of rugby players in this instance, but generally in the country, we have a decline in the number of females participating in sport. The number of women playing sport is in sharp decline, and there must be a reason for that. And because of that, that we've said that maybe we must go back and start revisiting some of these things that we have done as federations and as government and come out with a common blueprint and understanding on what the priorities are and how we're going to tackle them. And because of that, a lot of federations that came here said, we support the call for a big sports endeavor in the country, so that we start addressing this problem. Because there's commonalities between the different federations and entities that is involved in sport. Yes, Mr. Hoskins. You know, my family have never ever supported the Springboks. Never ever. There were people that I grew up in the Eastern Cape, former SARU players, that have never supported the Springboks. But because of the change at that level that has taken place 2 weeks ago, was for the first time, where in unison they could identify themselves with the team taking the field and supporting the Springbok team that is playing there. I went so far, Chairperson, as to say that, and the future will let us know what is hidden in there, is that this animal, the Springbok, that has been despised by our people for a very, very long time for the negative connotations attached to it, is now being transformed itself into representing something else. Right? And that is quite significant. It's quite a historical issue that we're dealing with, in that the animal that was used to oppress black people is now being supported by the black people. And I think the way that Peter is dealing with it is very, very progressive. But we need to ensure, and you are correct, that there are more players, black players, that will come through the ranks. And they are there. You find them everywhere. At the SA under 20s capping ceremony, you could see them. The players were sitting around there. So we need, it's a psychological barrier, then it's nothing else. You know, it's about faith, putting faith in players and treating all of them the same and giving them the same opportunity. So as far as that is concerned, you will get our support. And we will continue to call for the transformation of society in general and sport, specifically rugby in this instance. What we also need to do is to ensure that these successes that we achieve is not the appearance of Comet Halley. It's once there, and then it's gone. Next year, it's back to normal again. We need to put the building blocks in place now to ensure the sustainability of this process. And I don't think, President Hoskins, we could have given a better motivation as to why there should be a super team in the Southeastern Cape. Because that is where the rugby is moving into their direction. Your own consultants are giving it. And we need to put more urgency into the matter in coming up with the practical time frames as to when this can be achieved. Because ultimately, it will be a natural progression. It will be a natural process that will set in. But very worrying is that you can't build on the one side and on the other side it's dying. We need to find out what are the reasons. You know, South Africa is not a homogeneous country. There's different cultural groups, there's different ethnic and religious groups. And if I still believe if we get the recipe right of putting all of that together, then we will be a winning nation. What we have achieved thus far in rugby will be small compared to what this country can achieve. And that is where our emphasis is. But I want to ask a question, Dr. Besson. In you dealing now with the strategic plan and the transformation chart and all that, do you think the current constitution of South African Rugby Union is responsive to these plans? Does it allow it to happen? And if you say yes, you must say why you say so, because Cora has raised some of the issues. Rugby, essentially, like a lot of sports, could operate still on the federal system. Right, there's a lot of power in the different affiliates, and they must buy into things. You say yes, tell us why. And if there is room for improvement or changes, also highlight those factors for us. Because you are the practitioners on a daily basis that deals with these matters. We take a view from outside, and we are being given information, and from our interaction with people, you pick up certain things, and you ask yourself, but recently the president said we must change the constitution so that we can get a black ethnic person in as a selector, for instance. Now, instead of dealing it on a piecemeal basis, on a case-by-case basis, hasn't the time perhaps arrived to relook the constitution of South African rugby and see if it responds to the challenges that we currently face? Thank you, Chair.
Dr. Hassan?
Can I respond?
I want you, when you respond to the question of the Constitution, you must respond it when President was here last time. We spoke about this issue of the provinces. One of the things that the President raised that time was that provinces are having their own constitution which he cannot just trample on. It was a little bit of a peculiar scenario. Then when the President left, he said, but President, you can't be a President of South African Rugby Union. Then in the Free State, Sestef would do whatever he wants to do and obliterate your national position as the President of the country. It means there's something wrong structurally with the Constitution, because in the country, you can't do any other thing that is contrary to our national constitution, and even if you are Western Cape with your own constitution. That the national constitution, some parts, many of the parts of the national constitution clause supersedes the one that is the provincial, whether it's done by the ISP in KwaZulu-Natal or not, but it doesn't supersede the national one. So those are the things that we spoke about the other day. Because you know what we're saying? We're saying, President, but why are you not doing intervention here? President said, no. You see, there are issues of constitutionality here. There are issues that are protocols and all those things. But we were of the opinion that if he's the President of the South African Rugby Union in the country, and the buck ends with him, any other person cannot do any other thing that is contrary to his position. So that is what you're talking about around the question of this constitutional imperative. Yes, Dr. Basson.
Let me therefore respond from a strategic perspective. In government, we know all about the long process of aligning and changing people in departments. And all that. I don't even have to elaborate on that. If I say from a SARU perspective, if I take this piece of paper and I pour a lot of iron filings on top, the iron filings will point in all directions. The minute I put a magnet at the bottom, whoops, everybody starts pointing in the right direction. Now, you must remember that in the last 5 years, SARU as an organization, and you know it, has had 3 leadership changes. Every leadership change, as we know, brings about discontinuity, realignment has got to take place, etc., etc. So what we've got now is we started off with a transformation charter and people are aligning to that charter and we are progressing and the trends and the tempo will pick up, unquestionably. The second thing is this leads to looking at your organization from a strategic perspective. Within SARU leadership realizes that, and the President can talk to that, we cannot as an organization carry on in the way we currently structure because there are too many people pulling in different directions and the marketplace is full of what this guy is saying about that guy. We know all of those stories. So the first thing is you've got to look at how do we look like organizationally. And the constitution in terms of the new strategy and the transformation charter is outdated. And it will have to be attended to. There are certain changes that will be made today. And all of those instruments, plus the new act, the Sports Act that's in place, all of those things are forces that will bring better alignment, better support for the direction that you want to go on, and then the question of the autonomy of provinces, which has been a historical thing, will also be in the process, will be reviewed and looked. So we are in the third member of a leadership change in the 5 years, second one is, and the leadership are addressing and battling and fighting with each one of those things. So what the inputs that we get is, from a strategic perspective, just tells us how we're on the right track, because the guys think the same way as what we are doing. And that's why it's been such a nice, positive meeting today.
Cora, the last question, Cedric.
You see, Comrade Chair, when I go back to the issue of the unity talks,
there was no sincerity and there is not going to be. This issue, I mean, when you see that you draw up this strategy, you must have a mechanism to look at how to implement that strategy. If failed, what mechanism do you have to make the wheelbarrow to move? And the issue is clear until they look into their constitution, until they look really deep into the agreement which they reached in 1992, which was not honored until today. The one issue which was honored was international gains. The rest, it's not. You see, it brings me back. It's unfortunate that the president made this statement at such unfortunate time. I want to repeat, I'm not confused by what I'm saying. The issue of that he's not going to take it, they don't want any veto powers. Yeah, those were the words. There was no selection of team in SARU there by that point in time. It was the debacle of cricket. Norman Arendt, where the players wanted to even to petition him. That was the time when these observations were made. And the issue of Peter de Villiers, again, I want to say, to many people, that is seen as affirmative action. And that, I challenge that. Because if you look at the CV of Peter de Villiers, even compared to the ones with Jack White, it's a far better CV. The report which he has done with the under 21, where Jack has failed, he won't be cut. So, why there was not such utterances when Jack White was appointed? Why must we make such utterances when Peter de Villiers has been appointed? Another unfortunate statement. When the president said that it would be a sad day in South Africa when politics gets involved in the rugby. You see, now, that to me, politics was involved in rugby ever since the inception of rugby. Now, because the ANC is now in power, politics must say to that, we know it. There's a Minister of Sports which must see that this is get right. There's a Committee of Sports which must have the oversight. And there's no way that you can get politics out of sports. So these are unfortunate statements. And at very, very times when you see that these are unnecessary, there's no pressure, why the president to make these statements? So I'm not apologetic. Are these what we are moving and what they're moving? They're moving. We don't have a problem. But we must be honest with ourselves. If the head shows this side, then the others will follow suit. Yes.
I just want to understand you. Are you saying rugby must not implement the transformation?
No. I'll never say that. You okay. Know that. Even when you ask me that question, you know that transformation, I don't go too ways with that.
But I just want to understand, in when you say, in this juncture, he's saying, one of the things that he was taking into consideration was to transform the rugby. And maybe one of the unfortunate utterances was that there were political considerations. But he's saying, central to that, one of the objectives that we have agreed with them is that this sport has to transform, and he was carrying that transformation. Now, I want to know, is it wrong for him to carry that transformation apart from the utterances probably that are political?
The transformation must happen. It's part of our agenda.
Yes.
I can't go against transformation. The unfortunate utterances, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay, then the utterances are another thing. But in as far as transformation is concerned, President, you must transform that rugby. If you have to deal with a policy position of affirmative action, equity, redress, and all those things, don't be apologetic about those things. You have to implement those things because are the requirements of this little booklet, where is it? Somebody's taking it. Are a requirement of this little booklet. So maybe some other political utterances are a problem. But if you see, when the Freedom Front say the Rastelende axis in Rechni because it takes black people on top of white people and all that. I think it's wrong. Because when you're dealing with issues of redress, one of the things that we have to take into consideration is this affirmative action. And when you put affirmative action, in English it's so clumsy, but in Afrikaans it's called the Rechtsstellende Act. You are correcting one thing that was not right, which political now needs to be corrected, and therefore, in any event, inevitably, around issues of transformation, your appointment about Peter de Villiers, I will support it up until at the grave. It was a correct decision. It was correct. It was politically right for this country for that to happen. And those are the things that I just wanted to do. The issue of Mr. Basson, before I let you go, but you wanted to say something. No, I just, okay. Cedric is closing because I want to just ask one question.
So, Chairperson, just two quick comments and a concern, and then on the way forward, if I can just contribute to that as well. On Saturday, I was very proud of John Smith in the post-match interview. I didn't notice it when the game was being played. But he made reference to a person carrying the old South African flag in the stands, and he said that it's worrying that there's still people who don't know the flag of the country. They come with the old flag. It was important for him to say that because I think the team also want to they embody this thing of being a South African team that's inclusive of all the peoples of the country. That's very, very important, and they must be encouraged to take those firm positions. That will send a message out, instead of us saying or you saying it, that people will realize this is the character of the team and this is what we represent. My concern then is, what are the reasons, and maybe you don't have all of it here now, in Bloemfontein and also at Loftus, there was a problem in terms of getting a capacity crowd. Is this the trend with teams, even if the Six Nations champions, Wales coming to play, and so forth? Is it the economy that is having an effect? Are ticket prices too high? Are rugby matches becoming too expensive and inaccessible for the people? What? How does SARU see it? Have they taken a look at it already? And then lastly, Chairperson, is a way forward, because Mr. Hoskins has just started his two-year term. And he said that he's not going to be available for the next term. He's not using the Mugabe option of staying on. And maybe it's an unfair question now. Maybe you can go back with your collectives and decide. But can you identify for us, from your side, the indicators that you want us to measure you on? And when I say you, I'm not talking you as a person, Mr. Hoskins, but in terms of the leadership in South African rugby, in terms of transformation. What are these indicators that you see as important that we can gauge you on? Because over the past 2 years, we had various interactions with one another, and there's various issues that came up. And I think it will only be fair, Chairperson, if we start throwing the ball back to SAR and say that you come up and say, judge us on the following, towards the end of the two-year term of the current executive, and then we can interact with your indicators and see how we can most probably take this matter forward. It's an important, very, very important and crucial era that we are in rugby specifically in South African sport. And we need to get all our ducks in a row, so to see to it that we accelerate the process as we go along. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, President.
Mr. Chairman, I've got so many responses to make to Babakora, to Puti, comrades around the table. You know, I'd love to be here. I'm sleeping in Cape Town. I'd like to stay here. So give me a chance.
I'm giving you a chance.
No, Mpumelelo, don't.
No,
you didn't say time out when they were speaking.
President, leave Mpumelelo. I'm giving you a chance to speak.
My own colleague is censoring me now.
No, leave him. He's not chairing the meeting. I'm chairing the meeting.
We are very
fair. Yes, you know, I said, well, I'd like to ask Comrade Frolic. You know, you don't have to answer me, but you must tell me in your mind how you judge me after the 2 years that I've served as president of this country. Of rugby. Don't answer me, but I throw that question back at you. Now you see, Babakora, I took you as comrades in this thing, right? From day one, when I came into office. You see, Mr. Chairman, when I've taken you into confidence, because you are the leaders of our country. After the World Cup, Comrade Frolic and Comrade Compella, 1 week after the World Cup, I knew that we were having problems in our leadership in SA Rugby. I phoned you, Comrade Compella, Mr. Chairman, and you, Comrade Frolic, and I said, there's a problem that my Deputy President Tofila is going to stand against me. He has gone to see the third force in Stellenbosch to elicit support against me. Please, guys, look into this thing and come back to me. Up until today, I have not heard from Comrade Compella, nor have I heard from Comrade Frolic. Because I see you as my leaders. And I expect you guys to help rugby. Now, it's very important that if we are sincere, as we were taught by Madiba, then we must be sincere. Because if we're not sincere, we're going to kill our country. We're going to kill the blood of those that shed blood for our freedom. Sincerity, honesty, truthfulness, and so on and so forth. Now, I can go on and on, comrades, but time will judge us as to where we are, what we stand for. And I'm prepared to carry on this evening because I take this thing seriously. I fought for the freedom of this country like you did. For the same principles. Those principles have not changed.
Sir, I think it's important that you must deal with this issue because it's for the first time after President said it to us in this building on the 4/06. This is for the first time that he directly said this to, and apart from hearing it from people, I don't respond to the rumors, but we'll talk to you now and tell you exactly what has happened there. And then apart from your perception of leaving that as it is or not have been reported to you, it would rather be not have been reported to you, but not have left that thing as it is. Cedric.
No, Chairperson, I want to correct the President. He didn't phone me or you about a third force in rugby. In fact, you can recall that there was a certain attorney from a reputable law firm. I don't know where he fits into some player agent or whatever. I don't have the detail now. And you came to the ANC study group, yeah, in Parliament on a certain evening. We can get the, because we don't keep minutes of those meetings because we don't invite also people to the meeting and allow people to come to the meeting whose political credentials we doubt. That's why we don't keep any minutes of such discussions. It's political in nature. And you came there and you told us about this thing. And you asked that we look into it. And then we started a process. Started the process and we discussed it also with the minister who's the custodian. And from our initial feedback that we got was that in terms of a third force, it will most probably require a commission of inquiry to be set up, because then you must be able to subpoena people to come and tell you the truth. And the reality in sport is that there's not a lot of people who are prepared to stand up and tell the truth in public. We further found out then, through certain interactions and agencies, that in fact the people that are being referred to are common friends with all of you in South African rugby. It's a common denominator. So how do you determine who is the third force and what is the third force?
It's people that's involved at different levels. They are being referred to as the third, fourth. Some of them are parents of present players, past players, sponsors of South African rugby, multi-billionaires in the country, and they interact at various levels. And we went so far that the chairperson himself was in a conversation with this one who is deemed to be the key person,
the champion,
in bringing this thing together. That is how far we went with it. That is, however, this thing, if you look at the timeline involved, was crossing with the lobbying, intense lobbying, for the presidency of South African rugby. It was coinciding with it. And by then we realized that if you go a certain way and you set up your, ask the minister to set up the judicial commission of inquiry into this third force and all that, it would have a detrimental effect on whatever processes that federation was engaging in. So we entertained the matter, we looked at it, but as I say, all of you, including you, Mr. President, are regularly into interaction with some of these names that are being mentioned as the third force in Stellenbosch on the Winelands. That is the information that we received.
Let me give,
and I'm bluntly honest with you.
Let me give President more information. After you spoke about that with us, but what you didn't tell us that day in the study group, you didn't say Stofile is seeing the third force.
I'm not talking about the ANC task group. That was before the World Cup. I'm not talking about that, sir. At that stage, there was no opposition. There was no election pending in SA Rugby. Gentlemen, you were in France, both of you. There was no problem between Mr. Stofile and myself at that stage. It's only when I came back from the World Cup, and then I heard from Skalk Berger Sr. and Johan Rupert, that Mr. Stofile approached them to say, guys, you, Johan Rupert, please become the chairman of SA Rugby Pty Limited. I'm offering you that. And you, Skalk Berger, this and that and the other. Let me complete. This is not Mr. Frolic, sir. Comrade, don't confuse me with the task visit here. I'm not talking about, I'm talking about after the World Cup. Comrade, you were in Paris. You were in Paris. After the World Cup, after I was told this by the third force, I then phoned Comrade Butana, Compella. I phoned you, sir, and I told you about it. I told Comrade Frolic. This is not about the third, about the task team meeting. I phoned you and told you. I said, guys, please, comrades, this is happening. Please look into this thing. You know, before that, I was having regular conversations with you, Comrade Compella. Every week I was phoning you and Comrade Frolic. Every week. After that phone call, as God is my witness, I put my hand on a Bible now. I swear on my father's grave. I never heard from either of you, sir. And then I said, you know, where is the trust of our leadership in this country, guys? You are talking to me, I'm confiding in you. I don't know who else to go to. Who else do I go to?
Are you all right?
I am talking. I am not talking, Comrade Frolic. I'm not talking about the ANC task team. I'm talking about after the World Cup. It's only after the World Cup I discovered there'll be opposition. You see? And the same third force, Johan Rupert and Skalk Berger and them, called me and told me that they rejected Mr. Stofile's attempt to win them over. You see? And then they said, no, they support me. Those same guys, they said they support me. But I came to you as leadership of the Sports Portfolio Committee. You see? And then after that, what do I do? The only thing I could do was talk to the president of the ANC to share with him these conundrums that exist. But all I'm saying, comrades, please, let's work together. I'm saying, you know, why are we not working together? Why is there no trust? Why did you not come back to me after those phone calls, Comrade Butana?
To present the British-Irish land tour.
And the reason for that is very clear that there are issues that we need to socialize each other and get guidance on that arise from that program or the British Irish Lions Tour. So I just wanted to mention that to make a note and request you to give us a date for us to come and present that tour. It has implications that would require some guidance, you know, from the committee. And the sooner that can happen, the better. No, it's a discussion because there are issues there that we'd like to share and then get some input, you know, from you. So I just wanted to make that point that in your program for the year, if you could give us a slot, you know, to talk about that.
Yes, Mr. Oscar.
Mr. Chairman, let me conclude by saying that I think I've been coming here for more than 2 years, as you know, and I've deliberately kept quiet and restrained myself. The first time I'm speaking tonight, what's on my heart? And maybe I should have been doing this from the first time I came to the portfolio committee. Because I'll never forget the first meeting when I appeared with Cospasson. You know, let me not go there. But I just want to say that I respect you as the chairman of this portfolio committee and all the committee members. I was brought up to respect people in positions, and that is the way I am, and that is the way I will be. So please don't take my speaking my heart out. I think, please accept me from now onwards. I'm going to speak what's on my heart. But that in no way must be interpreted as a lack of respect for you or for your committee. You are a committee of the parliament of this country, of which I am a citizen, and I respect the portfolio committee, and I respect you as the chairman. But sir, all I'm saying is that I need to speak what's on my heart. So accept me in that light. I don't mean to be rude or to be speaking like the Prudhomme or whatever. I'm speaking as Regan Hoskins, and I'm speaking the truth and what's on my heart. So I do respect you. When I leave here, I will go out of here with respect for you. I'm not respecting you any less than I have done in the past. But please accept that up until now, I have restrained myself. I wanted to react to many things in the past, and I've kept quiet because I thought that it was the right road to take. For the first time tonight, I'm speaking what's on my heart. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. So accept that, but I'm not disrespecting you or any of the committee members whatsoever. And I'd just like to end off by that. And I hope that you accept my bona fides. Thank you.
Hey, in this committee, people are free to say whatever they want to say. The only thing that people are not supposed to do is to use the language that is not right because it's amounting to an offense, but speaking anybody's mind, it's okay. You are free to do that. But let me assure you, Mr. Hoskins, let me assure you that my challenge to sport has never ended. And my challenge to any person who has a different view than mine, and I raise my view, has never ended. And therefore, the battlefield is open for you to raise your view, and I will raise my view. And I will raise my view as the African National Congress, I will raise my view as the member of this portfolio committee. And then if it comes to the crunch, so it should be. But you must not think that we're taking it personal to you. But I think we must now up the standard now and not do peripheries and engage you in a manner that people engage each other. And then you must respond in a manner that you feel comfortable about that. And that is a decision that you and I are making today. On how are we going to engage each other. With respect, but definitely, I will take you on every time and again. anywhere, but remaining a person that I respect very much. And you see, when you engage me on a racist thing that has no history, like rugby, you're making me to get very nervous and angry. Because you're trying to make it a credibility, to have credibility in this country. It has not even a shred of standing. It's us who are busy periphering with Mandela and Mbeki and all those others. But it's in itself. It has no standing to me. And it's something that I will never worship. But I'm in pain because of an organizational discipline to say, yes, but I think it's, the South Africans is part of the thing that I would have to live and see it going on in this country. But to me, it has no appetite. I'm trying to work on it. So is everybody in this country. This is complete. So is everybody in this country. We are not assimilated to it because it still reminds us of where we come from. And it wants to maintain its character through the people that are there in it. And then you must say your mind. I will engage your mind freely. You must engage my mind freely. But yeah, you must say whatever you want to say. But you must have chance to say something, and then you must say anything that you must say. But I can rest assure you. I can assure you from today. I can assure you. Miss no any word from me. You are going to get it. Definitely. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Yeah.